Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Media Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 21st, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 701-801-1220. Participant code 118-676-260. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions, plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, we'll take a look tonight into God's Word before we begin. We're going to look in Ecclesiastes tonight, chapter 3, verses 1 through 15, I think we're going to read. 1 through 15. Okay, chapter 3, Ecclesiastes. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silent, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. What profit hath he who worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men, to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I knoweth that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all of his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be had already hath already been. That which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. Okay, tonight we're going to take a look. Maybe someone can see out there if Brent is around. If anybody recognizes his number, we'll call for him after we read this paper. We did send out all of the sheriff's papers. It finally did go out. It went out today. Tried hard to get it out by Friday. It was an impossibility, and even Saturday. We finished up on it Sunday night. Goodness, late Sunday night. And we did mail it out today, late morning. So all of the sheriff's mail is on the way. I think it's going to be a powerful message to them. I think it's a timely message for them. There's a lot of stress, a lot of things going on around the nation. And the sheriffs are under a lot of stress. There is some disturbing news of some things going on out west concerning getting rid of sheriffs. And sheriffs need to realize this, understand this, and band together. And we, the people, need to band together to prevent this from happening. We'll get into that detail a little later. I think Gerard probably has more information than I do on this. So we'll see whatever it is that he can share. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing. But the sheriff's paper is the beginning of the solution. We have worked very hard for 3 years trying to get things together to get to this point where we're at right now. And there's not much time. We're right on that edge, just barely keeping up with what the enemy of liberty is doing. And it seems that they are clearly hell-bent to take this nation down this year. That has become totally obvious to me. We need to beat them out and just get right ahead of them. And we need to make the first move. We need to do what has to be done. And it's all in the hands of ultimately the Lord. Look at the sheriffs have got to wake up and start doing things. And I do think that that's about to happen very soon. I think they are waking up. I think they're realizing, or they will soon realize, who we really are. Of course, they've been lied to, and, you know, don't pay attention to those people. They're crazies, you know, or whatever lawyers have been telling them, because they all have access to lawyers. And when they get papers that appear to be legal, all these people, sheriffs are no different, that are elected, go to a lawyer to interpret it. They don't even read it. You know, after all, I can't understand that. We've been trained that way. And we have to untrain ourselves. We have to step up. We have to believe in ourselves. We need to dive into these things, read, and just try to understand it. If we understand it, we'll never forget it. Okay, we wrote another paper. It went rather quick. We did it over the weekend, and while we were doing all the paperwork, and we were able to, matter of fact, it was completed, I think, just on last night, 8 o'clock, 8:30 last night, we finished it. And we were able to print it out and mail that out also with the sheriff's paper. This one's going to the governors. It's closely related to the same paper. It's time for them to do something, time for them to wake up. Or reveal themselves as the enemy of the people. Because if they don't act after what we're telling them and what we told them and the information that we supplied them, the evidence, then clearly they're the enemy of the people. They're the enemy of liberty. And what a level will be, will be. And again, it's a matter of getting, the sheriffs moving, doing what they have to do, by making necessary arrests. But in order for them to make arrests, they need to be able to understand what laws are being broken and that they need to do these things. And they also have to recognize that we are the people. After all, if we are not the people, who is the people? Who are the people? Our numbers eventually, and I think quite soon, because I think there's that tipping point. We haven't hit that yet, but it's coming. But when we hit that, we will be more than them. When I say we will be more than them, I mean we, the people moving in this movement, will be more than them that are elected, that we have elected servants. But that enforcement is what's really necessary for us to achieve, and that's what we're looking for and waiting for, and I do see it coming. Okay, so this is the letter we wrote to the governor, closely related to the last paper. There are certain things in here that we've repeated from the last one. We'll probably just make some notes and skip through it. But basically, we skipped through the other one also. We didn't read off all of the information that was on the data disks. And we're going to skip that, too. We'll just give the headings and then skip over the listings. Anybody that wants to follow along on this, you can go out to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on News. On the blue bar, top left side, right next to Welcome, nationallibertyalliance.org, click on News. Scroll down to, hopefully it's here, hang on, Federal Court Filings. I'm just refreshing my paper to see, my page, to see if it did register. I just got it up there before. Let me try again, maybe too many people are trying to hit it. All right, I'm getting a waiting for a response, so must be a lot of people trying to get in there. Okay, I'm not seeing it up here. Let me check the date. All right. I'm not seeing it up here. I did just file it. I was kind of running late here, just getting it up here. Let me just run real quickly and take a quick look to see if it made it up there. Successful transfers. All right, I'm going to have to just read it, and people have to follow along. I apologize for that. And we'll get it back up as soon as we can. So let's go forward on this. Okay, this letter went out to every single sheriff, and I mean every single governor, and they went out today's mail, as I said. So sheriffs and governors should be getting both of these papers. 3 days, maybe 2 days, I don't know. It depends. On the closer to us on the East Coast, probably 2 days, all the way out on the West, 3 days. Okay, we personalized every letter. It's dated today, March 21st, 2016, and it is personalized to whatever the governor's name is, what their address is, and the same thing, of course, you know, on the paper here and the envelopes that were matched up. We also put a DVD, which is the evidence that is attached to this. And it starts off, RE, what's this in reference to? This is an official report of crimes. Therefore, it is a crime to intercept this communique. And it is felony rescue and aiding and abetting if the recipient fails to act. We expect the governor to act. He's the president of the state. And the law requires that he acts. Matter of fact, it requires that we tell them of this crime. And it is required that he acts upon this crime. We will not hear your plea if you pass this to a bar lawyer or bar judge and he advises you to ignore it. Most of the criminals we are reporting are these very same bar lawyers and bar judges. Dear Governor, the purpose of this communique, also known as any information, is to report subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic, and to remind the governors, legislators, and judiciary of every state of the Union of the law of the land, and their duty to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution for the United States by securing our republican form of government. It is the duty of the governor of each state to inform the state legislators, and judiciary of the subversion and their like duties to obey the law of the land and thereby secure the republic. Your attention and consideration of all the supporting evidence on the enclosed data disk addressed in this information is required. Because we are officially reporting crimes of subversion, as governor, you have a sworn duty to examine and consider all the evidence and act upon it. The United States Constitution, Article 3, Section 3, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless in the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act, or on confession in open court. The Congress shall have power to declare the punishment of treason. No state legislature or executive or judicial officer can war against the Constitution without violating his undertaking to support it. Hooper versus Aaron. In 1790, the Congress of the United States enacted that if any person or persons owing allegiance to the United States of America shall levy war against them or shall adhere to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, and shall be thereof convicted on confession in open court or on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act of the treason whereof he or they shall stand indicted, such person or persons shall be adjudged guilty of treason against the United States and shall suffer death. And that if any person or persons having knowledge of the commission of any of the treasons aforesaid shall conceal, and not as soon as may be disclosed, and make known the same to the President of the United States or some one of the judges thereof, or to the president or governor of a particular state, and that's what we have done, we are making known to the governor of all 50 states. President or governor of a particular state, or someone of the judges or justices thereof, such person or persons on conviction shall be adjudged guilty of misprison of treason, and shall be imprisoned not exceeding 7 years, and fined not exceeding $1,000. This was the Crimes Act of 1790. We the people on numerous occasions, have reported treason to the United States Congress, the federal and state judiciary, and now to the state governors. And we have recently formally sent similar information to all 3,100 plus or minus county sheriffs for enforcement. There are four things that you, as governor, are duty-bound to immediately execute to restore the security of our republic. Just wanted to check my mics, make sure I'm talking here. Okay, here's the four things. Number one, we're going to name four, and then we're going to go look at all four of these. First, number one, restore the balance of power, a vested right of the state. Restore the militia necessary for the security of a free state. Restore the state land. Support the sheriff concerning subversion of the United States of America. Number one, balance of power, a vested right of the state. The 17th Amendment is null and void for the following two reasons, and it is the duty of the governor to bring it to the state legislature for action. The 17th Amendment is null and void. The guarantee to each state of equal suffrage in the Senate is the only constitutional provision that is expressly unamendable under the Constitution's own terms. The 17th Amendment removes the state's right to vote, and therefore was and is unamendable. Consequently, the states have the absolute vested right to ignore it. One cannot repeal something that was constitutionally never able to be changed. Nullification is the proper remedy. And we read this in the United States Constitution, Article 5, concerning the suffrage of states. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of legislatures of the two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislators of three-fourths of the several states or by convention in three-fourths thereof as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendments which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article. And here's the key part. And that no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Let me reread that. The word suffrage is right to vote. In this case, it's a vested right to vote. We vested them with a right to vote in the Senate right here. That no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. And all states did not agree with this. And even if they could agree with this, it couldn't be forever. It could only be for one situation. But even there, nevertheless, you cannot take away the vote of the state. The balance of power has been totally destroyed by the 17th Amendment, because all of these problems we're having today, many times the states could have prevented this in the past and the present, and clearly even anything that takes place in the future could have been protected and prevented. That's why they worked to get the 17th Amendment before they were able to pursue things as far as they did. Hence, in order to restore the balance of power, the state legislators have a duty to remove the existing de facto United States senators that serve the will of special interest groups and replace them with de jure constitutional United States senators who will serve the will of the state, thereby restoring the balance of power. Our founding fathers set up two houses, one where the authority of the state had a vote and a control over Washington. States do not have a control over Washington today. The other house that was set up is the power of the people through representatives to hold Washington accountable through vote. Special interest has destroyed that, and when they took away the senators from the states and gave it to the people, special interest groups destroyed that too. Nobody has a hold on Congress. Congress is a loose cannon, and we have a dictator in the White House controlled by an oligarchy, and that's been there for quite some time, long before any of us have woken up. The 17th Amendment is fraud and subversion against the United States of America. The only purpose of the 17th Amendment was to remove the power of the states in order to provide for the easier mission of subversion against our republican form of government. States have the absolute vested right to ignore it. We the people have unalienable rights. We have given the states a vested right. They don't have unalienable rights, but we've given them certain rights and authorities and jurisdictions to act within. And this was an absolute vested right, the right for them to decide what they wanted to decide on concerning what goes on in Washington. And they have no control. They have no right. They have no control over Washington. States have the absolute vested right to ignore it. One cannot repeal something that was never legally ratified. Nullification is the proper remedy. The requirement of 36 states did not ratify the 17th Amendment. Utah explicitly rejected the amendment. Alabama, Florida, Georgia refused to vote on it. Kentucky, Maryland, Mississippi, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Virginia. There was no debate or voting records listed in the California State Senate or Assembly journals concerning the ratification of the 17th Amendment. It is alleged California voted to ratify the 17th Amendment on January 28, 1913. See California Journals, page retrieved from the State Archives, Item 7, regarding the constitutional amendment to elect U.S. Senators. See disk, the data disk under the 17th Amendment, California Journal. May 20th, 1913, from committee without recommendation. How could it go from committee without recommendation on May 20th if it was allegedly voted on 4 months earlier? It wasn't. The official records from California show for January 28th, 1913, that there was no vote that day or any other for the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was clearly not ratified by enough states. See data disk on the 17th Amendment not ratified. There is also an investigation from Georgia State. Georgia State did not vote on the 17th Amendment. Their governor at the time commissioned an investigation. Congress did not properly adopt the amendment before it was even sent to the states. Prior to the de facto 17th Amendment, U.S. senators were chosen by the legislature in a state which they were to represent. The U.S. House of Representatives was supposed to represent the people who elected them. This has been referred to as the People's House. The U.S. Senate, however, was supposed to protect the interests of the vested rights of the state governments that they represented. The U.S. Senate was there to defend the states from encroachment by federal government. The 17th Amendment was sold to the American people as a way for the voters to have more control over the federal government. It did just the opposite. Having U.S. senators elected by voters made them really no different than U.S. representatives, all of whom are controlled by powerful special interest groups. Thereby, both houses of Congress are now controlled by monopolized corporations. And this is exactly why America is in the moral and economic downward spiral. While state governments have absolutely no say in who is sent to protect the vested rights of the states and the unalienable rights of the people. This is why the federal government is out of control without a bridle. Number two, restore the militia necessary for the security of a free state. The U.S. Constitution provides that the governor and the state legislator have the powers and are therefore responsible to protect the state against invasion and to guarantee a republican form of government that is to be secured by the Second Amendment. Bill of Rights, Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor forbidden to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. Article 4, Clause 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby anything in the Constitution or laws of any state, to the contrary, notwithstanding. Article 4, Clause 3. The members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. All governors and state legislators are bound by oath under the U.S. Constitution, and all but two states under the state constitutions to provide for the militia. Number 3. Restore state land. Today, the corporate government, acting under color of law, illegally claims ownership of approximately 28% of the land within the United States. Nevada has the largest portion of total area seized by the federal government, a little more than 81%, followed by Utah, more than 66%, Alaska, nearly 62%, Idaho, nearly 62%, and Oregon, 53%. Our Constitution clearly states that the seat of the authority of the federal government to control is restricted to square 10 miles, and all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. The federal government does not own, but holds in trust and controls only 10 miles square and other needful forts, dockyards, and other buildings for government operations, but only by the consent of the state, whereas territory is held in trust for future statehood and not owned by the federal government. We, the people, never gave the federal government the power to own property, only the power to hold in trust and manage until disposed of for the United States or an individual state. Nowhere in the Constitution does the federal government have the authority to create a territory within a state, with or without their consent. Territory. A part of a country separate from the rest and subject to a particular jurisdiction. Black's Law 4th. A portion of the United States not within the limits of any state which has not yet been admitted as a state of the Union, but is organized with a separate legislature and with executive and judicial officers appointed by the President. American Law. See Ex Parte Morgan, D.C., Hawk. In Utah, the Senate recently called on Congress to repeal the 17th Amendment to the state senators, could again select U.S. senators. It voted 20-6 to pass SJR 2 and sent it to the House. It calls for Congress to repeal the 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which was passed by fraud, not ratified in 1913. That allows people to directly elect U.S. senators. Its sponsor, Senator Al Jackson, Republican of Highland, said, "Electing senators by the state Senate is needful because no branch of the federal government now represents the needs of the state governments. A change would force senators to do that. Today, senators are more beholden to special interest groups than to their states because those interests give them money for re-election." Jackson added, "It's time for our senators to come home every weekend and take direction from this body and from the House and the governor on how they should vote in the upcoming week." Senator Margaret Dayton, Republican, agreed, "We represent the people, and we are the ones who can respond and give direction to our senators." In short, the 17th Amendment destroyed the balance of power between the state and the federal government, which created an environment for tyrants to seize control, and so they have. The governor and the Congress of Utah are both going up against the federal government, which lays claim to 64.5% of the land in Utah state. which is about to change. After 3 years of the federal government refusing to discuss the matter with Utah state government, Governor Gary Herbert is moving forward with plans to seize the 31.2 million acres of Utah land from the federal government and restore control of the land to the people of Utah. This action is unprecedented. In 2012, the Utah legislature passed the Transfer of Public Lands Act. This law demands that the federal government relinquish its hold on the land by December 31st, 2015. That deadline is now passed, and tension is building. We, the people, are actively addressing governors of all 50 states, encouraging them to follow suit with Utah and to work with the sheriffs to enforce the law. Number four, subversion of the United States of America. The crimes that we are reporting are too vast for one governor or sheriff, but will take a united coordinated effort within each state to address and suppress. Therefore, we are addressing all 50 governors and all 3,100 sheriffs, plus or minus, each individually by U.S. mail. If you have no desire to look in depth into this matter, you are unfit for the post with which you have been entrusted, and you should resign immediately, or face charges of aiding and abetting and felony rescue. As you read through this information, the first question you must ask yourself is, why is that we, the people who stand upon the law and demand our unalienable rights as sovereign people, have been branded by the judiciary as sovereign citizens, which law enforcement has been adeptly trained to interpret as terrorists? We submit to you that all we are asking is that the judiciary obey the law of the land. Why aren't they just agreeing to that? The law of the land is the Constitution and all lawfully legislated laws, and that is synonymous with common law, which the bar judges, and bar lawyers say has been abrogated. If that was true, who abrogated it? Did the bar? If we the people ordained and established it, where did we give the bar any authority? We didn't. If our Constitution has been abrogated, then just who are we as a people? We the people did not need the bar to write the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and its capstone Bill of Rights, which the bar treats with such disdain. We, the people, did not vest the bar with any powers. So how is it that they control our laws, the law which is America's helm? How is it that the bar approval is needed to become a judge? How is it that bar approval is needed to become a lawyer? How is it that bar judges tell us we cannot practice law unless we are bar lawyers? How is it that when an elected or appointed servant is confronted by the people, they defer to a government-supplied bar lawyer when they have a duty to speak? How is it that the bar-controlled de facto courts control the trial jury? How is it that the bar-controlled prosecutors control the grand jury? How is it that the bar-controlled prosecutors control the sheriffs? How is it that we, the people, have been shut out of our own process? The practice of law cannot be licensed by any state. Schwer versus Board of Examiners. The practice of law is an occupation of common right. Sims versus Aherns. Why were constitutional studies and civics removed from our schools, elementary through college? Why do our elected servants take an oath to protect and serve the Constitution when they do not know the Constitution? Why go to lawyers and judges for interpretation of the law when they do not uphold the Constitution? We realize that all elected servants, as well as we the people, have been deprived by design of a proper education in American history, civics, Constitution, and common law, which is prerequisite to clearly seeing the crimes being reported herein and gaining the empowerment essential to act. This communique will serve as a foundation for a proper education in the aforesaid subject upon which you can build by following up with our free online courses in the Constitution and Civics, which includes American history and common law, found at powerofthecountysheriff.com. We realize that reading and examining this communique and its attached evidence will take many hours, and taking the course, many more hours. But because you lack this knowledge, you must, by duty, endure. And we promise you will see things in a whole new light, which will effectively empower you to save the Republic. If you fail to educate yourself, you have made a conscious decision to remain complacent, and thus are guilty of aiding and abetting the criminals guilty of the crimes we are reporting. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury of We the People have spent the past 10 months filing papers in all 94 federal district courts and copying all elected and appointed federal and state servants by fax, email, and U.S. mail. As our forefathers did with their parliament and king, so too we the people have demanded obedience to the law of the land and extended an olive branch to all at every step of the way.
You're beating yourself up for no reason.
Okay. And have been met with silence by most, arrogant resistance by the federal judiciary. We realize that some members of the judiciary are under threat of life and limb, and many others are just useful idiots. Therefore, we will leave the olive branch on the table until the arrests commence, at which time mercy will be removed. All who continue to violate the law of the land, thereby putting our liberty in jeopardy, will answer to the people in a trial by jury in a court of law. As President John F. Kennedy, in a speech on April 27, 1961, before the American Newspapers Publishers Associations in New York City, said, "So say we to you. If you are awaiting a finding of a clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear, and its presence has never been more imminent. It requires a change in outlook, a change in tactics, a change in mission by the government, by the people, by every businessman or labor leader, and by every newspaper. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidations instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match. There is a very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That we the people do not intend to permit, and we can prevent it if we act before the perpetrators here and after subverters can proceed. Upon information, we believe that these subverts, in a coordinated effort under the banner New World Order, and in a concerted effort with the United Nations, will attempt the beginning of the closing of the iron fist of fascism upon America, starting with martial law and gun confiscation this year, 2016. Unless we, with our governors and sheriffs, get in front of it. We can prevent the bloodshed by simply applying the law of the land and arresting those who refuse now. America is not a democracy, but has become an oligarchy. It does not matter whether a Bush or an Obama is in the White House. A small group of tyrants behind the scenes control our elected dictator, whom we call president. America was formed as a republic, which means rule by law, by the people, under a constitution, which is the contract between we the people and our three branches of government. To make this truth clear upon the table, we the people submit the following evidence. Okay, now we just list out the different information we have on the data disks, which is evidence in certain folders. Okay, testimony of subversion. Following audios, videos, and transcripts are just a microcosm of a mountain of evidence available to make the case that America is in jeopardy. Only by governors, state legislators, and sheriffs standing up now with we the people to simply enforce the law of the land can we get ahead of this dangerous chapter in America finds herself in and prevent the death of millions. And then we list out a number of things, audios, videos, transcripts, all on the data disk. And then we come to a second part in the data disk under in the evidence folder entitled under the folder testimony concerning BLM tyrants and then ranches versus the BLM, abuse of power, extortion, and murder. We lay that out, many lists of video, transcripts, audios. Then we have the sheriff standing for the Constitution. Sheriffs need to take a stand and unite within their states and nationally. Sheriffs need to have a relationship with the grand jury administrations within their represented counties, within their respective counties. Sheriffs need to go to the grand jury directly. There is no need to beg the doorkeeper, that is the prosecutor and the judge, to seek an indictment. Just go to the people, make your case, and if the people agree, you'll get the indictment. Then we list quite a few things, videos, so on. Then testimony concerning the BLM tyrants. Now they are going after the sheriffs, and it is starting with Sheriff Glenn Palmer. Sheriff Glenn Palmer did everything right, but they are character assassinating him and claim he aided and abetted terrorists. If they can get their puppet grand jury indictment, they will label him a terrorist, and all sheriffs will be in jeopardy. Then we have federal court filings on the data disk. The following papers were filed in all 94 federal district courts and served by U.S. mail and copied by fax and email to all elected and appointed federal and state servants. As required by common law, these papers were written in plain language for all the people to understand. Careful reading will provide a good foundation for understanding our common law founding documents, which is the contract which our servants upon which is the contract with our servants upon which the law of the land is founded, namely the Constitution for the United States of America, its foundation, the Declaration of Independence, and its capstone, Bill of Rights. Its reading will also sharpen your understanding of the law of the land and also your ability to clearly see the subversion against the United States of America, which will provide the resolve you will need to empower you to act with confidence. And then, of course, we list all of the papers out. We give the subcategories within all these papers. It goes on for a few pages, and we end with this paragraph. We will be communicating with you soon via fax and email. If you have not been getting our faxes and emails, please send your updated fax and or email to us@uclgj.org. We will soon set up a teleconference so that we can have a special open forum to answer questions from governors, sheriffs, and legislatures. You can visit us live and ask questions at our regularly scheduled Monday night open forum held at 9 p.m. EDT to midnight. For details and calling in, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, Monday call, so on. In closing, we want to encourage you to start communicating these things amongst yourselves, not only within your state, but nationally. Because united we shall stand, and divided we will fall. Thank you for your time. Sealed, March 21st, 2016. Signed, Grand Jury Foreman. P.S. If data disk is corrupt, email us@uclgj.org. End of paper. Okay, that was 11 pages. The paper going to the sheriff was also 11 pages, and it had a lot of the stuff in here. You know, we did, of course, did some extra things here talking with the governor, so the message is pretty much the same. But, of course, all the evidence that we had put in with the sheriff is the same evidence here, although we did add some other information concerning the documents on the 17th Amendment. There's quite a bit of information on that. We will be posting all of this up on our news page with the evidence on the data disk. We'll post all that stuff up. We'll get it up there this week. I'll try to do it tomorrow. We're extremely busy. There's so many things going on. No sooner we finish one paper, we're on to another paper, to another paper. It is really, you know, getting very busy across the nation. The assault is on upon our sheriffs, hard, heavy, and we intend on stopping it. And we're going to stop it by uniting we the people, the sheriffs, and the governors, and legislators, state legislators, as many as we get. We don't need them all. We don't need them all. We just need a good amount of them. We don't need 100%. We don't need 75%. We don't even need 50%. When I'm talking about that percentage, I'm talking about governors, legislators, and sheriffs. We just need a small number of them that are willing to do the job. And once the job starts in one place, it'll move like wildfire across the nation, and many others will join on. And it'll build and build, and we'll take this nation back. And one court hearing at a time. All right, that brings me to the end of what I have to bring tonight. Let me just open up an item or two before we move on. We have achieved our goal to be able to send all of these things out. So they all went into the mail today. Bills are being paid. You know, things are a little tight, but we'll get through. The key thing is that it does look like we're going to have enough money to pay this month's bills, and we, of course, did get everything out. But again, you know, everybody should be given $5 a month or more to keep things going. We got a lot to do. We got a lot more papers to do, too. Got a lot going on in my mind, so I don't know exactly what the next step is going to be, but we will announce it or talk about it if we execute it between now and next Monday, and see where we go from here. But there's so much that's going to happen, and some things we just can't even talk about. Some things we will talk about. We want to give little pieces of information because we can't at the time talk about these things. Okay, with that, let's look to see if Brent is on the line. I'm going to move over to Q&A, and I'm going to ask everyone not to come into the queue. Brent, if you're out there, just hit *6 once I get into the Q&A and come into the queue. So Brent, hit *6 to come into the Q&A, and we'll unmute you. Okay, I think I see you. 317, is that you, Brent?
Correct.
How you doing?
Correct. Oh, all right.
Yeah, I tried to call you today. I'm sorry I didn't get to you early in the week. We've been so busy, but we do need to talk in the next couple of days, maybe. But what's the subject you're going to be talking about tonight?
Subject today is the Office of Sheriff.
Okay.
John? Yeah, we were talking about, you were
Very
talking
timely,
about sheriff.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to give it to you for about 20 minutes, or whatever amount of time you want, and then we'll do an open forum again for about 20 minutes or for whatever time you want, and we'll take it from there. So with that, I'm going to shut up.
Thank you. Appreciate it, John.
Thank you.
The anyone who's watching what's happening in our country, both locally and abroad, across the hinterlands of our several states, will notice, if their brain is engaged at all, that we live in a country of lawlessness. And the only remedy to lawlessness is true law. Jesus Christ said, "Depart from me, ye workers of lawlessness." Now, he's not talking about people that are just haphazardly lawless. He's talking about people that work lawlessness, people that are conspirers with others, co-conspirators to destroy true law and bring about lawlessness. If law is false, even if it's an order, it's lawless. Mussolini said, "If you put me in power, I'll make the trains run on time." He did. But he was lawless. He did it the wrong way. He got the result, but he hurt a lot of people in the process, and he refused to follow any due process. And he, as we'd say in our country, and as our Constitution says, any law of the land. Let me get to the sheriff. And how does he fit into this? How does he fit into this situation of lawlessness that we now see ourselves faced with? When I was a little boy, back in the 1950s, we had a fellow in our locality. His name was James Barber, and he had homesteaded in Oklahoma before it became a state. And he used to say that every cutthroat on the face of the planet in the Western world had found their way to Oklahoma. And the reason that Oklahoma drew lawless men, and lawlessness, by the way, did reign in what is today Oklahoma, then called the Indian Territory, was because the federal government was the only law enforcement power in that part of the world. But to make matters worse, he didn't settle in the Indian Territory as such. He settled in what is now the panhandle of Arizona, territorial land, about 160, I believe, miles long, about 38 and a half miles wide. And by an oversight of Congress, that strip of land was not included in any territory. It was inadvertently forgotten. And so no political process, no law enforcement, there was nothing there from any power to govern anything, state or federal, whether it be a territory or a state. And the stories that he told introduced my young mind to the idea that men have a serious problem. They're incurably, as Jeremiah says, wicked. They're black-hearted. And without, of course, the restraining power of the Spirit of God, there's no limit to what men will do. Well, I didn't have the ability to think deeply about it as I did later, but later I began to think about some of the things he said, and a movie came out. I was still pretty young, and the name of the movie was True Grit. It was one of John Wayne's last movies. And it was about a U.S. Marshal that had the responsibility of enforcing the law, capturing criminals in the Indian Territory, now called Oklahoma. And in that movie is depicted the real-life representation of a man named Judge Parker. He was a federal judge appointed after the war between the northern and southern tiers of the states, appointed to have criminal jurisdiction over white men, not red men, white men in the Indian Territory, and his court sat in, the name of the town escaped me, Fort, it's right there on the edge of Oklahoma and Arkansas. So, yeah, somebody's looking at the map by this time and they'll get it. But that's where the courthouse sits. Well, interested later, I was passing through that part of the world and I went to that courthouse. Fort Smith, it came to me. Fort Smith, Arkansas, it's right on the border there and near the Arkansas River. I went to that courthouse, the old courthouse. The new federal courthouse there is named after Judge Parker. And I did a little research into the matter, and I discovered that Judge Parker had committed over 160 men to hang while he was judge. About half of them made it to the gallows. The rest were dismissed on appeal or died before they got to prison. But Judge Parker, for all of the executions by hanging he ordered of men in the Indian Territory that were caught there, committed crimes there, crime did not assuage. It only got worse as time progressed. From that time, after the war in America, the Civil War, as some people call it, until Oklahoma statehood, I believe it was about 1907, things only got worse, and it culminated in the federal government's attempt to capture a man. I think he was half white and half red. I can't remember his name. But he mounted a cannon on top of a mountain down there in the Ouachita Mountains, and they had a terrible time smoking him out. They finally got him, and that was the last of the criminals the federal government attempted to capture. But upon Oklahoma becoming a state, about the year 1907, I believe I've got that right, Oklahoma went from one of the most dangerous places on the planet to being one of the most peaceful and productive. Well, there were the normal things that happened and still happen all over the country. But things immediately eased up, and settlers by the thousands, there were already many there, but settlers by the thousand moved into the land that was there. And the reason for that, in my humble study conclusion, is the institution of sheriffs. Now, that's an extreme example of what sheriffs can do, but it's a good one. Lawlessness does reign in America. I've had a friend the other day said to me that, Brent, I think we finally got crime off of the streets and into government where we can keep track of it. And I think it's funny to me because he's telling the truth. But in our own day, sheriffs have the same ability that they had in those early days. Allow me to read a quote, and going on the reality, I've learned that he who never quotes is never quoted, and that's a quote, and I repeat it often. I'm going to read from a well-known common lawyer, William Blackstone, Commentaries on the Laws of England, often called Commentaries on the Common Law, Volume 4, page 418. Says the most remarkable of the Saxon laws we may reckon is the election of their magistrates by the people, even that of their kings, election of all subordinate magistrates, their military officers and heretocs, watch this, their sheriffs, their conservators of the peace, their coroners, and their court Reeves, R-E-E-V-E-S, Reeves, continued till the Norman Conquest, others for two centuries after, and some remain to this day. That was written, or put in print, I should say, about the year 1765, that was put in print from his lectures delivered about that time. But notice he says the most remarkable of the Saxon laws, he's speaking of the laws of the Saxons before, as they stood before Magna Carta. That would be the year 1215. Blackstone's reaching back and telling us that sheriffs in those days were elected locally. And he mentions here the office of Court Reeve, R-E-E-V-E-S. And we have there the revelation of Blackstone of what a sheriff fundamentally is. A sheriff is a shire reeve. A port reeve has authority, an agency, as it were, over the ports. The sheriff reeve, or the shire reeve, has an agency in the shire. And the shire, later, when the Normans showed up, they were rather Romanized, and they called it the county because that's where the count had power. But before that time, before the year 1066, before the Normans arrived from the coast of France and conquered the Saxon, before that, sheriffs were elected. After that, the king appointed the sheriff, and he appointed him in each shire. Course, at that time, again, they were called counties. Many things happened between then and now, but the sheriff did come with the English-speaking settlers to America. And America, early on, in the middle colonies especially, most notably Pennsylvania, William Penn divided that grant of land called Pennsylvania into counties, and just as was England, New Jersey did this too, divided it into hundreds. And there were several of the colonies that divided the counties into hundreds. The hundreds became townships in America. One state has retained its hundreds, that's New Jersey, still has hundreds. Hundreds were traditionally that part of the county that had about 100 families. And all of these divisions, the hundreds, and then below the hundreds were the tithings, and the tithing had about 10 families, thereabouts. It was a geographic area. But all of these, we'd call them today from the bottom up, tithing is a precinct, township is 100, and then a county is a shire is a county. All of these had what was called a reeve, R-E-E-V. That's an old Anglo-Saxon, Anglo-Dane word that means agent. Agent, in this case, agent of the people. The shire reeve was the agent of the shire. We've slurred it into sheriff. He's the agent. By the way, every agent at common law has a principal. That's someone who gives the agent authority. And the agency for the sheriff in America, we did away with that whole idea of the king, the executive appointing the sheriff, appointing the sheriff, and we in America, we elect the sheriff just as did the ancient Saxons before the year 12, before the year 1066 AD, reaching way back. And just as James Wilson of the U.S. Supreme Court said that America had attempted to reestablish our common law as it existed before Magna Carta, before the year 1066 even, when the Normans invaded. So we in America are more English, as it is said, than the English, in that our sheriffs are elected by the people and have the power, not appointed by the king or the government or parliament, no, elected by the people. That makes them very much different. And because of that difference, we are largely who we are. Now, every county in America, I've told you a little bit about the sheriff. I want to tell you what the problem in America with the sheriff is. And again, in my humble studied opinion, my opinion, this is the biggest problem. And this is the reason why sheriffs, if they aren't doing their duty, this is the reason why they're not. You ask anybody that's been to federal prison in the United States what the first question is that the prisoners ask a new arrival, and it's always the same. Did you come from county, or did you come off in the street? Did you come from county, or did you come from off in the street? If you came from off in the street, you didn't have it too rough. But if you came from county, that is a county jail, if they held you in the county jail before you got here, you're probably starved half to death and abused. Well, sometimes that's true. And the federal government farms out its prisoners from the federal system to county sheriffs, and there's not a county, listen to me close, there's not a county sheriff in the United States that does not make at a minimum, and I'm talking about the smallest of counties, a minimum of $1 million a year off from the federal government for housing federal prisoners. That is how the feds control the local sheriffs. Tip O'Neill, Speaker of the House, I wasn't a fan of Tip O'Neill. I wouldn't have voted for him if somebody had held a gun to my head. But like everybody else in office, in Congress anyway, he had a way with people where he couldn't have got in, and he said a lot of memorable things. And one of the things Tip O'Neill was known for was saying, all politics is local. All politics is local. Well, I take that just a stretch further. I think he's right about that. But the reason all politics is local is because all government is local. I don't care how much they try to distract you away from local government. It remains local. And the only true government that God has given to the sons of Adam is the government he dispenses, as John Wycliffe says, individually, to each and every man, individually, direct from God, government over his hands, his feet, and his tongue. And it is that government that will make us or break us. And that goes also for the sheriff. I want to bring up one other point. Got a few more minutes here. I want to recommend a book to all you folks, because I know you wouldn't be listening in. This is a tightly targeted audience. I've figured that out from the emails I get. Your folks that are interested. I want to recommend the book. And the book is called The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate. The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate. A magistrate is a government official. That's an old way of saying it. And written, the book was written, this book, by one of the less-known reformers of the Christian church in Europe. And his argument was this. It was all about government in those days, as it ought to be today. His argument was that everybody in government has a duty, a bounden duty, direct from God. No matter what rung they occupy on levels of authority, they have a duty to obey the law regardless of what someone else tells them, above them or below them. That's the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. And every sheriff, he's subject to the people, he's below them, but he's above many others in each county as the chief law enforcement officer of the county. And his duties, it's amazing when you read about the duties of the sheriff, defined largely by our common law. Our common law, traditionally we've called it the law unwritten. It is the law of custom. It's just the way things are. For instance, we say, when the Supreme Court, we used to say, the law in America seems to be whatever 5 out of 9 Supreme Court justices says it is, whether for reasons of bias or senility. That was the joke. But why do we say there are 5 justices have to say it's this or that before we say it's law, or before we say it's binding precedent, however we say it? Well, it's not a matter of anything written down anywhere. It's just a custom. It's custom. And it may not be a good one. I don't know. People have to decide about that. But the duty that Supreme Court justices have to give their mere opinion, you, friends, neighbors, and relatives, each one of you, every one of you, has the same duty. You have a duty to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all of its enemies. You say, well, I haven't taken an oath. Well, listen very closely. Oaths don't bind anybody to do anything. Let me repeat that. An oath doesn't bind anybody to do anything. No. An oath just additionally binds you to a duty you already had. When people get on the witness stand and say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, they already had a duty to do that before they took the oath. But the oath additionally binds them. Again, I'm quoting men much more learned and studied myself. That was one of the statements of one of the men who helped write the Westminster Confession. When Parliament asked the men at Westminster for advice concerning their lawmaking powers. And you, as an American, have a duty to support and defend the Constitution. And if you've ever taken the oath, all you did was additionally bind yourself to that duty. Because every man has a duty, and every woman has a duty before God to follow true law. And that duty is never lessened by what anybody else says. Sheriffs have that duty. And if they're looked at as somewhat of a lesser magistrate compared to the president of the United States or the governor, or if you look at them as the greatest magistrate, the big frog in the little pond, as it were, in either case, whether he's viewed as great or less, and all of us are either one or the other, or both, depending upon to whom we are compared. But in every case, we have a duty. We have a duty to support and defend true law. And that goes for the sheriff as well. But this thing about federal money coming to sheriffs is what has weakened the office of sheriff in the United States. I'm from a small place, small county, Cumberland County. Not many people live in Cumberland County. maybe over 10,000, but maybe not many. They built a new jail, beautiful jail, pretty building outside of the courthouse. They built it so they could make money from the federal government. And if you look into your county, you'll find the same thing goes on. And the object is to receive so much per prisoner from the federal government, feed the prisoner on half the cost, or a third of the cost, or three quarters of the cost, and pocket the rest, and then tell the voters next time you run that you made this much money for the county and you kept things solvent. This is tough. And if that money goes away, it's going to be hard on counties. But that, in my humble opinion, is something of importance about the office of sheriff in the United States. And with that, I'll end my comments, John, and leave it up to you for what's next. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, we're going to open up for questions. Anybody has a question for Brent for the next 20 minutes or so? Star 6 to get into the queue. All right, we already have one person here. Let's see. I'm just going to open them up. 7700 area code. Go right ahead. 770-265 number. Area code 770. Go right ahead.
It's Rebecca. Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello?
I can, Rebecca. Yeah, I'm here. Go
yes,
ahead.
I went to a Republican Party meeting on Saturday, and I've been invited to go meet with one of the sheriffs up in Gilmer County here in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
You got any advice or any paperwork that I could maybe take and give to him and help? I'm going to try to get him to go to the website as well. And I was actually talking to one of the gentlemen that's running for Congress from that county, and he's invited me to come up there. So I'm going to try to go up there this week and talk to the sheriff up there in Gilmer County.
Well, I would suggest that you go to www.commonlawyer.com, commonlawyer.com, click on the button that says books, and I believe it's on the right-hand side. You can find there a book called Militia of the Several States, Militia of the Several States. And I believe it's available also at Amazon.com. You can find it there. But to go to that website, click on that button, or go to Amazon.com, see if you can find it. Get a copy of Militia of the Several States, and get a copy to the fellow running for sheriff. In the back of that, and get a copy, by the way, to the congressman and the state legislature, or your state legislator. And in the back of that book is a model state militia statute. That is what needs to be done. That figures, and this will tell, too, how that the sheriff's office figures into that. The militia clauses of our United States Constitution, there are four of them, have been ignored for about 175 years, totally ignored, with the exception of the foundational one, the Second Amendment. The rest of them have been ignored. And if the militia... If the militia clauses were acted upon, there are four classes of persons that are to act upon them. The militia, the members of the militia, the federal government, congressmen, presidents, and state legislators, along with state governors. The only people in America that have acted upon the militia in the past consistently 175 years have been the militia members themselves. They're standing by ready. But the militia clauses are precise. Never since the history of ancient Israel and the delivery of the five books by Moses to Israel, outlining in detail the duties of the militia of the 12 separate tribes of Israel, never has any people had a law as clear, although fundamental, as we have had in our Constitution concerning the militia. And it's taken from the old third fair of the Anglo-Saxons. The duties have never changed, and even our oath, I think this, I mentioned this last time, even our oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States is the oath of the militiaman. His duties are two, jury duty and armed defense. That means enemies foreign and enemies, that's armed defense, and enemies domestic, willing to defend the law of the land and the jury. Get a copy of that book to him and then tell him to act upon it.
Okay. What we're dealing with up here in North Georgia is they're annexing parts of the North Georgia Mountains, and they're planning to bring it under UN control. So I'm trying to get to all the sheriffs up here because it's getting to be quite a hot topic, and I'm trying to, you know, get their ear and see if they'll come to our website. And I'll definitely go get these books and take copies with me, because I'm trying to get around to about 4 or 5 sheriffs up here in North Georgia.
Go to Amazon, commonlawyer.com, militia of the several states. And,
okay.
Well, good gal. Yeah, go after it. All politics and all government is local.
Okay, thanks for your question. And we'll go to our next person. And we'll try to keep it short to one question per person. Okay, 415, area code 415. You've just been unmuted. What's your first name and your state? 286 number. 415, 286.
Hi, this is Donaldson. I'm from Northern California. Hello, everyone.
How you doing, Donaldson?
Jeremiah Donaldson. Not bad. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Good. What's your question,
okay,
friend?
Well, it's really more of a comment. I was just, you know, I do work with the Common Law Advisory Committee. I've called in before. You guys know I'm in Northern California. I get to the law library all the time. Anyway, I wanted to read this piece of case law from Words and Phrases,
right,
which is
well,
a body of
do,
books.
We'll
real quick, real quick, real quick.
Yeah, hold on. We'll ask you to come back on, or I'll try to get to you right after we finish with Brent, okay? So I'll keep you marked here, 415, and we'll come back to you. But we're going to take questions for Brent right now because he's only with us for 20 minutes for questions and answers. So 541216. You got the mic, go right ahead. Give us your first name and your state, 541216.
My name is Melissa, and I'm from Idaho.
Hi, Melissa.
I got a question. I kind of caught the tail end of your conversation regarding oath of office. About a month ago, I asked the judge on one of my CPA cases, and I asked him for his oath of office. What
Yeah, we lost you there. Try again. Well, maybe I got lost.
No, I'm here. She
too.
Dropped off. Yeah.
I guess we're both here. We lost her. She dropped.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry for that. Okay, we'll go to the next person. JoJo from PA, you got the mic.
Hello, guys. My question relates to the previous talk. Is that okay for now, or do you want me to just wait
well,
till later?
Well, yeah, I'll keep you in the queue here, and we'll catch back to you, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to our next caller, Scott Palmer. Go right ahead, Scott. You got the mic?
Yeah, I was just wanting to know. In 1917, they did the Trading with the Enemies Act, and they continued on through 33, and it continues on today, which basically makes us enemies of the state. Therefore, we have no rights. I was wondering how he could address that.
Well, you're talking wrong. I would suggest you never say you have no rights, because to say that is to deny what God has said. God said he delegated them to you, and that means you've got them, and you can't shake. Right is an old... It's an old Germanic word that means responsibility. It stresses that portion of the law in the German tongues of responsibility, duty. You have duties. God gave them to you, and he gave them to me, and we better do them. And I appreciate you bringing that up. I like to talk about this because we tend to think or tend to talk as though the government has taken our rights. The government can't take our rights. It's impossible. And many people smarter than me have made that observation, including Tom Jefferson and Jim Madison and some of those fellows. They made it clear that that's impossible. John Adams said the same thing. It is impossible that we alienate. Well, it says that in our Declaration of 76. They are inalienable. That means they cannot be separated from us. They cannot be separate. We cannot even separate them from ourselves. I used to tell my children, and I'd get frustrated. My wife, I'd say, I still say it once in a while, I'm father and I'm husband. And at this point, there's nothing I can do to change that. And my responsibilities won't change. No matter what happens to you, what happens to me, what you decide to do, what I decide to do, I can't shed it. Indeed, when every person is born, God endows them with certain responsibilities called rights. And they better be doing them. And regardless of what any government says, any goofy alien sedition, whatever. I remember reading all about all that stuff. And I think it came out of World War I or something. There may be force behind that stuff, and they may make it hard. They may try to interfere with the responsibilities God has given you. But all of us, it is incumbent upon us, we have an obligation to know the fundamental law, the fundamental will of God, as it says in the book of Hebrews, chapter 5, and learn it, and keep it says, and do it. And if we don't, we ignore that at our peril. God is not playing games. He never has played games. And people who ignore their responsibilities will pay a horrible price. And those who attempt to interfere with my God-given responsibilities and yours, they will pay a horrible price also. God promises that in His law. His law says that the consequences will be horrific. So let's be very careful. Again, thanks for bringing up that subject. And it's an opportunity for me to remind folk, be very careful to ever falling into the trap of saying you don't have somebody's taking your rights away, whether it be the most powerful office on the face of the planet or your neighbor trying to stop you from doing what God says you got to do.
Well, amen to that. Thanks, Scott, for that question. I'd like to just pipe in just a moment or so. National Liberty Alliance takes the position that they are de facto, they are fiction. And it's fraud. The whole thing is fraud from the beginning to the end. They had no authority, no jurisdiction, no power. And so we treat it that way, as if, as it is, fiction. It's de facto. We come in as de jure, and we just bring the truth and lay it out exactly the way we see it. And that has proven to be quite powerful, to the point of bringing them to pure silence, really. So, but good question, Scott. Thank you. Okay, let's take our next person, Frank. Maybe you can give us your state, Frank. You got the mic. Frank, you've been unmuted. Or whoever I unmuted, I'll mute you and unmute you so you can hear it, because I see the name Frank up here. You've just been muted. Now you've been unmuted. Is that Frank? Okay, we'll go to the next. I'll leave them there in the queue. 760-208, you have been unmuted. Give us your first name and your state.
California, Dave. Thank you, John.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, I'd like to ask the gentleman, thank you for being with us tonight. Do you or the people you work with have any experience with recruiting one of the gun-toting fictional agents of the corporate government to arrest via citizen's arrest other agents, other rogue agents of the government? In other words, the guy with the gun is the one to execute the enforcement. Can you share with us any successes or methods for getting the man with the gun to go arrest the bad guy?
Well, certainly. And, of course, all of us, including the sheriff, it doesn't make a difference who we are, if we witness a felony, in most states, I won't speak for every state, but at common law, you have the power of arrest if you witness the felon in the act of committing the felony. And the sheriff has that too, and you don't need a warrant in such a case to do that. Now, you yourself, if you're not a sheriff or a policeman, you don't have authority at common law to arrest a man because you saw him commit a misdemeanor. But a felony, check your own state. It's different from state to state, but as a general rule, that's been the rule. But I've never told a sheriff to arrest somebody, never had occasion to. And I've never been in the presence of anyone else who has had occasion to. But I do know, having been a shore patrol, have served on shore patrol before, that law enforcement officers, in most cases, and shore patrol, the shore patrol men are taught this also, you arrest the fellow you think in a fight or in a dispute, you arrest the fellow that looks like he'll give you the least resistance, and that'll stop the fight or the dispute. And government does that a lot. It's natural to do. Really, you don't have to be trained. I've watched parents do it with children. It shouldn't always be done that way. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I just know that is what happens in many cases. And to tell a police officer what to do or make a suggestion, he'll take that often, I'd imagine, kind of personal, someone telling him what to do. But again, I have no experience with it. I've never done it. And maybe you have, and you could enlighten me about it.
John, can you share on that a little bit?
Well, what exactly is the question? I'm not sure.
The question is, is there a pathway when you see a wrongdoing by a rogue corporate public servant, is there a pathway to compel another public servant that happens?
Yeah, the only thing I think you could do, if anything, is really call the sheriff, and if he understands his place and his duty, then he will do something about it. But if he doesn't, he's not going to do anything about it until we get to the other side of things. And you know, when I say the other side of things, mean we the people get back into the courts and bring common law and put the king back in the court. Until we get to that point, it's a hit and miss that may or may not happen. Now, I have seen a situation north of us here in another county where there was a Tea Party doing some demonstrations on one side of the lake, and on the other side of the lake was Governor Cuomo, and he had something going. I think it was Governor Cuomo. If it wasn't him, it was some other big shot. But he had something big going on. They didn't like the Tea Party on the other side of the lake because they had their signs and making some noise, so they called the police, and the police came in to throw them out. Well, someone called the sheriff, and the police were putting up barricades at the time that these people were being thrown out, and the sheriff came in with his deputies, had the barricades removed, told the cops to get out of here, and told the people they're free to do what they want. Now, there was a sheriff who understood his duties. You don't find that often. So I would say call the sheriff, but other than that, you know, I don't know that you'll get any place else with any other officer, police officer, whatever they want to call them. So anyway,
how about the marshal?
Well, the marshal, no, that's outside of his jurisdiction. Marshal works for the federal government. Remember that. And he's really to do the same thing that the sheriff's supposed to do within the federal district and the federal authorities and federal jurisdictions, which is quite limited, by the way. But I don't know if Brent would want to talk on that a little bit about the marshal.
Well, U.S. marshals are empowered by federal statute to have all the powers of law enforcement of federal law within the boundaries of the states that a sheriff has in his local county. Let me repeat that. That's an important one to grab hold of. It's not talked about much. Now, I'm not saying that this is a lawful law, but I do know that the law is on the books, and it says, I'm going to try to pull it up. I thought maybe I could do it quickly. Maybe I can't. But it says that, well, here it is, 28 U.S.C. Section 564 says this: United States Marshals, Deputy Marshals, and such other officials of the service, that means the Federal Marshal Service, as may be designated by the director in executing the laws of the United States within a state, may exercise the same powers which a sheriff of the state may exercise in executing the laws thereof. Now, if you're thinking at all, you'll see a conflict here. I understand your question a little better after you talked a little more. I have been where federal officers, not just marshals, but federal agents, have tried to execute search warrants and do other such things. I've been right on the spot when the sheriff was called in. And the sheriff, and I've had other clients tell me this has happened to them, the sheriff will either take control of the situation, or he'll say, as one of my clients told me, a sheriff said to him, the local sheriff said, there's nothing I can do here, they're within their rights. It depends on the sheriff's judgment call, but it is clear to me, in the last 15 years, sheriffs better understand what their duties are. That doesn't mean they're willing to do them, but I know they better understand because the word has been being put out by a lot of people as to what the duties of the sheriff are. And now that the word's out, they have even more responsibility. You know, Magna Carta puts it this way. Magna Carta says that magistrates such as sheriffs and judges and bailiffs, it says, must be required if you appoint them. They're talking to the king. They said if you appoint them, they must have two qualifications, meet them both. They must know the law, number one. Number two, and I'm quoting Magna Carta, they must mean to observe it well. Knowing it's not enough. You've got to be somebody determined to do it. And that's the kind of a sheriff you're looking for. And by the way, I want to repeat the title of the book, The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate. It's becoming a little more popular since that lady down in Kentucky, in East Kentucky, said she wouldn't issue marriage license. She was a clerk down there in the courthouse. She was a lesser magistrate, and she decided she would obey the law and not some Supreme Court decision that was so far out of bounds of any reason as to be law, appearing to make lawful that abhorrent abhorrent crime against mankind, as our common law says, a sodomy. That's the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, and that's what we're asking the sheriff to do, to take his jurisdiction, to do his duty, to perform his rights, his authority, his jurisdiction, within the boundaries of the county wherein he has been placed to exercise his authority.
Yeah, I'd like to add a little bit onto that, too. A couple of things. You know, the Judiciary Act of 1789 really detailed the appointment of the U.S. Marshal. And I guess they weren't careful enough, and some individuals, I think maybe possibly a judge, decided that they wanted to get rid of a marshal, or even if the president wanted to. I think it was Marbury versus Madison, which cleaned that up and clarified the fact that once the appointment is made, there is no provisions in the Constitution for that appointment to be unappointed, you know, for them to be removed, even by the president. The president makes the appointment of the U.S. marshal. There are 94 of them. And but he cannot unappoint that marshal. He either has to serve out his term, or he can be removed, breaking the law. If he was indicted by a grand jury, then of course he could be removed from power. But other than that, there is no other way. He's got as much authority and really power, so to speak, from being removed as an elected individual. Now, the sheriff, of course, is an elected individual, and no one can remove him from power except the people through the ballot box and, again, or through, the grand jury. I guess that's all I have to say on that. But let's take our last caller. Thanks a lot, Dave. Let's take our last caller for Brent. Let's see. It's 845, New York number, 797. First name.
Hello, everyone.
I know you're from New York.
Peter from Hudson Valley. John Bronco, the paperwork. I hope everybody appreciates the intensity of the moment. It's incredible. Brent, I really loved your ending and how you brought up the fact of the money involved in the prison system. And maybe you could elaborate more on how the bar judges, also their pensions, the officers, for DWI, everything that they do, there's a payola in here. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, please?
Well, I'm not sure exactly the point at which you're driving. Are you driving at the point that all of the judges are paid by the government? Is that what you're driving at?
No, it's just being that your end point was that the county will be missing so much money.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
when this is taken away, and obviously we have to find solutions to keep county services.
I see your point. That's a good point. I haven't worked through the answers, so I can't say do this or do that to make it all right. I just know this: the counties have become dependent upon this money, and now that they've spent it, they don't want to go back. The people in the counties would not want to go back and not have that million. In a small county, a county of, let's say, 50,000, there's one near here. Now, this was 12 years ago. 12? Yeah, 12 years ago. The sheriff was running. I was running for office at the time. And so I kind of got to know the sheriff a little bit. Nice fella. He'd been in 4 terms, and he ran on the fact that he brought in $4 million a year or better through housing federal prisoners. Now, I'm sure that's been a lot of years ago. The federal prison population has grown exponentially since then. Federal crimes are upwards of 6,000 different federal crimes when our Constitution only provides 4 categories of crimes that the Congress has jurisdiction to pass and enforce. We've got almost 6,000, many of them overlapping. Federal prisons are double capacity, and we're building one. We're building them constantly. I used to have the numbers in my head. It's overwhelming. And I'm sure they're making $8 million in that county up there every year instead of 4. Now, they're not making money. They're just getting money. And I heard a fellow recently, an otherwise good man. I'm not opposed to him. But he said, well, it's all right to do that because you're providing a service. We just don't want the sheriffs to take money from the federal government just given to them as grants, which most of them do that too. But I have to say, no, money is money. And if the federal government wants to grow the federal prison industry, by the way, it's Federal Prison Industries Incorporated, about the year 1936, it's a big corporation. And this is big business, has been since the days of the socialist programs and the communist programs of FDR. And we'll never get over that for a long time unless there's some big changes. But part of the problem there is, see, we're struggling with that now because of what happened back then, the incorporation of the federal prison system. I used to read old laws, old cases when I was in law school about the charges to the federal grand juries. They were fascinating in those days, early days. But I noticed, and I got to notice, and later I didn't read anything in a charge to a grand jury except for an admiralty problem, an admiralty case usually. And then I discovered later, as time went on, I became more familiar with the criminal law industry, that the federal government didn't have any prisons until before World War I. If you committed a federal crime, there just weren't that many federal crimes, hardly any. And if you committed one, the government would send you to Leavenworth. They'd send you to an army brig, or an army barracks, as they call it, or a navy brig. Sandpoint up in, or at the shipyard at Norfolk, the Navy Yard, but there were no federal prisons. Well, now there are bunches and bunches and bunches and bunches of federal prisons. And they're housing
people. I guess the IRS has been busy, huh? The
IRS is a big part of it, and you make an excellent point, John. But they're housing. As men await trial that they don't want to put on bail, they house them in county prisons. And if they're awaiting sentencing after trial, they put them in county jail.
Okay. All right. Well, that brings us to the end. Thank you for questions for Brent. And Brent will be back again next week. What's the subject for the next week? Do you remember?
No, John, I don't. It had something to do with, well, we had talked about, there's so much talk. Due process. Due process was the thing that I had written down that you and I discussed. We'll talk, though, Lord willing, in a couple of days, and maybe we can narrow that down, and I can tune that in with what you're doing.
I can throw a couple of different subjects, and then you can come up with some thoughts and ideas that'll help to feed us for the job that we're trying to do, and get into the courts. So.
Okay, John. Thank you very much.
Give us your website again, and your book.
www.commonlawyer.com, and the name of the the main book there. There are others, there are half a dozen others, but the big one, the ones that people seem to be most interested in, is called Excellence of the Common Law. It's a comparative law text of about 1,000 pages. Comparing and contrasting the law of the land and the law of the city, the only two legal traditions, the tradition of religion, law, and government, the only two that the world has ever known and ever will know, the law of the land, called our common law, and the law of the city, called the civil law. CommonLawyer.com and Amazon.com. You can get it there, too.
Okay, thanks, Brent. Right, we'll talk. I'll talk to you in a few days. Let's try to get on the phones. Thanks.
Okay,
okay.
I will. Bye.
Thank you. All right, we're going to go on, move over to Rod. Gerard, are you about ready to take the control here?
Yeah, sure.
But before you do so, we have two people that I told we'd bring back because they had things or questions other. They're in hold right now. Let me push the buttons on them, and then once we finish with these two people, then you can pick up on the Q&A button clicking, okay, so we don't get confused. So the first person, I forget their name, they were the first one up. It's a 415 number, and Jojo from Pennsylvania is the second person. So let's take the first person. Go right ahead, 415. What was your name again in your state? And I know you wanted to say something, but it was off point, but now here you are. Yeah.
My name is Jeremiah. I'm calling in from California, and what's up? So here's the thing, people of each state, when you refer to the people, by the way, I do work with Rich from the, you know, he's doing the primer. Anyways, my question is, like, when you say we, the people, right, from your letter to the sheriff, because I've looked at it, I have it in my drive, I actually looked up every case in it and shepherdized the cases, okay? I was the one that did the work on that. So I've read the entire thing, and I have a question. Basically, when you say we the people, are you talking about we the people of the United States? Are you talking about we the people of the state? Or I don't understand that. That's kind of ambiguous because there's a lot of definitions for people. People of this state, people of each state, people of the United States. That's a question for you, but I also have something else. Give me one. Can I follow up? Give me 2 minutes at the end of this, all right?
Of course, yeah. Let me just respond to the first question, then you can go to the second.
Yeah, yeah.
We the people of the United States, and I always add in of America, but we take it right out of the Constitution, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect unit, establish justice, and ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote for the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So that's who we're talking from. We are the people. We're coming from the perspective. When we speak and write papers and we end up with the grand jury foreman on it, we're speaking as the people under the authority of the common law grand jury, particularly in this case, which we will remain seated as the unified United States common law grand jury, and we will remain seated in that until we deal with the problem at hand, which is subversion against the United States of America by enemies, both domestic and foreign. And until that is accomplished and we work that out and the people are back into the courts, the unified United States common law grand jury will continue in seating for however long that takes. It would be a wrongdoing to continue in that because we're not normally set up that way, but these are extraordinary times, and therefore we are performing extraordinary, duties or situations. So we are talking on behalf of the people. We are the people, and that's who we are. And we're thousands of us across the nation, as I'm sure you know. But, you know, we come together. It's quite a few hundreds of people usually come together when we get together for the purpose of making decisions and particularly focusing on indictments, that kind of thing.
Can I interject?
Sure.
Because I was wondering if you knew if the standard to determine who the people were. And what the government would use to determine whether or not your claim of being the people is correct. Can you tell me the standard that the government is going to use?
Well, I'll tell you that we the people don't care what the standard of the government is, because we are the people. We're telling them that we're the people. We're the one that that ordained and established this Constitution. So we are the children of the founders, you know. And they're not obeying the law. We're coming to tell them one thing and only one thing. Well, actually, two. First of all, we're telling them they're not obeying the law. And then the second thing we're telling them is to obey the law. So from that perspective, we're coming, and we couldn't care less what they say or
First
think.
Of all, I hear you, but what I'm saying is you're on the right path, okay? Because there is no standard that I know of right now that for any court to really determine who the people are outside of the Articles of Confederation. But I will say that also the people of the United States has been termed by the Supreme Court in 1892 in a case, Boyd v. State of Nebraska, which is 12S.CT.375. The phrase people of the United States is synonymous with citizens, both describing the political body who, according to our Republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. Okay, so this is my question. Who are our representatives as the common law, NLA, National Liberty Alliance?
Seems that person dropped. Well, hopefully they'll come back. Let's keep an eye out for that number. I think it was a 414 number. I'm going to answer that question just quickly, and when he comes back, I'll try to answer it again a little more in depth. But we really don't care when they pull a fraud upon us. They try to create some kind of a situation. They use the word citizens. Our founding fathers call themselves citizens. I'm wondering if I'm coming through. Gerard, am I coming through? Because I don't see my...
Yeah, you are. You're coming
in. Okay. All right. Our founding fathers called themselves citizens. They didn't shy away from that word. They talked about citizens. But as time went on, these elitists, they do magic with words, and they, over time, try to change the meanings of words. They play around with... even Black's Law, they've turned it upside down on its head. We use the fourth edition, which is, I found, pretty good. I have a copy of the second edition. We use Breviers, if that's the proper pronunciation for that one, and for understanding of words. But they play games with words. They come in, they do their magic, they pay people off, they commit their frauds, they get in all of this unconstitutional codes or statutes or whatever you want to call them. And it's totally irrelevant. It's a fraud. It means nothing. We're going to ignore it. We're going to go forward. They can call us whatever they want to call us, But we're still coming into the courts. We're still going to eventually arrest these people. And they're going to meet justice. And that's the name of it. That's the end of that. Doesn't matter. Fraud doesn't mean nothing.
John, he was asking who our representatives are. And I think
we've lost our representatives,
Right. I know, we have a corporate overlay. However, those people that are in that corporate overlay are still bound to the Constitution that they take an oath to, our Constitution. We can still hold them to that standard.
And that's the key. They are our representatives, which should be the Congress, not the Senate. The Senate should be the representatives of the state legislatures, and the governor of those states. Our representatives are congressmen that we send in. And again, that whole system has been defrauded, and they don't even understand what they should be even doing. But in any event, that's our representatives. They should be our representatives, but they are only there to represent us within the framework of work and authorities and jurisdictions that we gave them. So they're not to extend that beyond that. Once they extend it beyond that jurisdiction, they now become what's called bad behavior by the Constitution. And bad behavior, they need to be removed. So we will correct them, And how do you remove them? There's only one way to remove individuals for bad behavior. Of course, the ballot box is one. But we can't allow a person to continue in their bad behavior, destroying and injuring people by ignoring the Constitution and just being out of control and causing problems and chaos. So who is there to remove them? Well, that's we the people through the power and the authority of the grand jury. That's why we're setting administrations up across the nation for people in every county and they'll be the investigative body for the grand jury. They will make sure, they will be the doorkeeper, so to speak, for the grand jury. They will make sure that people get to see the grand jury. If anybody wants to talk with the grand jury, it should be an open door to go in and talk to them, anyone at any time. And we will go out and investigate anything that we see. And, of course, the grand jury themselves can see something and go out and investigate. They have that authority, the constant, you know, that's clear. So, you know, that's where the power and the authority really is. So if they get out of line, we can remove them. That simple. Once we get back to that kind of a situation, and I don't know that America has ever been there. I don't think that we really have. We were heading there, but we never got there. But we need to get there. And therefore, now we can put the king back into the court by bringing the principles of the Bible into the courtroom. It's that simple. Coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy is the key of those principles, and bring back justice. And once we do that, our whole political realms, all the political realms, will be totally cleaned up, because they won't be able to break the Constitution, or shall I say, break the law, or their contract, or whatever you want to say. Anyway, I don't know if that individual will keep an eye open for them. But let's go on to the next person, JoJo from Pennsylvania. I'm going to unmute them directly. Go ahead, JoJo.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, John, earlier this evening, you were talking about the 17th Amendment. Now, I know that you got a bunch of books. And I just wanted to know, when did you find out that the ratification didn't happen? Because on page 27 of the Constitution of the United States book that you give out to people or they buy from you, it says in the footnotes that the 17th Amendment was ratified, and it gives you the date. Did you find out after the printing? And how do we correct this in our books?
Did I find out before or after?
Yeah.
You know, well, look, I have heard about the 17th Amendment problem for a long time, long before the book, and that probably we should have found a way to correct that before it went in, so we should have done that. I was at a position where I thought everything after the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments, was suspect, and we have to treat it as suspect. But I recently being maybe 6 months ago or so, I did a study, and we put together a constitutional course, and I've come to the conclusion that most of those amendments are right and just. They belong there. The 13th Amendment, for instance, and there was two of them, but the one that we know, which is the freeing of the slaves, that particular one wasn't really necessary, but from the perspective of a repentant country, it was necessary. So I'm good with that. It should have been called the 14th Amendment and so on, move everything else adjusted. The 16th Amendment, I'm very much aware. I became aware back in about 2001, 2002. I was involved with We the People and with Robert Schultz. I had discovered back then that the 16th Amendment had never been ratified. And I've got the book by Bill Benson, I think his name is. It's a two-volume system. He goes through and he has done all the research and pulled together all of the different papers throughout the states. Now, there was another person, I forget their name, just recently was looking into this. I just forget. It was a female. I forget her name. And she was out, did the same thing Bill Benson did, going from state to state looking at the 17th Amendment. Now, I had heard before that the 17th Amendment was never ratified, but I never saw the proof. I hear so many people talking about it, but they don't get the pudding out there. They don't put the proof out there. So I was searching recently for that, and I did find it. And I did get the proof, and I did post it into the DVD data disk that we created. I will be getting those documents up online. It's a little tedious and difficult to go through them, but clearly it is true. California particularly, they have it listed as one of the states that ratified, and we particularly pointed out the fact that 3-4 months later, the committee still hadn't come out with anything. They were just coming through for the committee. So how could it be that they're going through the committee of concerning the ratification of the 17th Amendment when 4 months earlier it was said that they have had ratified it? So that was a clear – that one state just took them out of the box. And there were two or three states that were in that category. The other two were under different circumstances, I forget particularly. But I didn't pay a lot of attention. You know, I got that information, and at the time I also discovered, which I didn't realize before, the suffrage that's involved here on the Fifth Amendment, on Article 5 of the Constitution. And when I realized what that was saying, that one little couple of words at end of the sentence was saying, I realized, hey, it didn't matter whether they ratified it or not. Totally irrelevant. It's still null and void because the Constitution is the only thing in the Constitution that clearly states that you cannot get rid of it, okay? Now, the rest of the Constitution, that puts the rest of the Constitution in jeopardy, so to speak, because, goodness, if they get a constitutional convention, the question is what are they going to do with it? You know, the enemy will definitely get their fingers into this. But I also realized, of course, that, you know, look at it, there's the Capstone Bill of Rights and there's the Foundation Declaration of Independence. And when you take those two documents, well, that sandwich the Constitution cannot create any kind of a situation that would be repugnant to those two documents. And so the Bill of Rights, I think, is the most genius, in my opinion, of all the work that was done. That Bill of Rights was the most genius. And some thought it wasn't necessary. Jefferson was dead hard on this. Said, no, these people deserve the Bill of Rights. We're going to give it to them. We're going to put it in there. And they required that before they would, a lot of the states required that before they would sign the Constitution. So it was agreed because, for expedient purposes, and I don't agree with this, but that's what their decision was, to do it for expediency. They went forward, signed the Constitution with the agreement that Bill of Rights would be added in, and it was. I think that was a huge mistake, in my opinion. I think it violated principles, and I don't know what Jefferson's opinion on that was or others, but that was a problem. But nevertheless, it was the right thing. They did it. So that Bill of Rights has been very protective of us. That is the very reason why we're still free. It's the Bill of Rights above all. I mean, goodness, they have shredded the Constitution. They don't even, if you look at what our government is doing and you read our Constitution, there's no relationship here. You know, what's going on here? Where are they getting all this authority from? So clearly they're ignoring it. And now the courts, for quite some time, they boldly, the last 20 years or so, boldly deny your Constitution. No problem. Yeah, you're not getting the Constitution in this court. I mean, wow, that is, wow, that's subversion against we the people. It's war against the Constitution. It's a punishment by death, ultimately, is what the law says. But, you know, I guess that's all I got to say on that matter. Anything else, Joe?
Yeah, no, that was it. I just wanted to have some clarity on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Anybody else that wants to get into the queue, *6, Gerard, you're going to want to just, from this point, click on the next and see what happens. If JoJo comes up again, you know, you could just bypass JoJo, but go right ahead. I don't want to hit that drop button because I don't know if that means I'm dropped from the call or just drop out of the queue. So
yeah,
I wouldn't hit that, you know what I mean? So
don't touch that button now.
Don't touch that button. Yeah.
Look, I just want to say something before we get going. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on across the country. Generally speaking, as far as what's going on in the West with the land grabs and these federal issues, there's sort of a news blackout, you know, east of the Mason-Dixon line. You don't hear anything. Meanwhile, the federal government is out of control over there. it's only a matter of time before it worked its way here. But they're, you know, they're not, they don't want us to know over here, because people are getting, people are starting to become animated. And, you know, just before they decided to go in and pull them out of that refuge, they were saying things like, this is a virus and it's spreading, and they're gaining traction, which they absolutely were. And so they decided that they had to close it down at all costs. And, of course, they went in and they did what they did at all costs, and they screwed it all up. And then they, now they're proceeding to try to cover up the screw-up. And the things they're doing to cover up end up becoming, you know, as bad as or worse than, you know, what they did. And, of course, they're starting to throw each other under the bus now, because there's all kinds of people doing all kinds of investigations. Let me tell you something. As dumbed down as America, you know, we always say, ah, everybody's dumbed down, this and that. We have some of the finest technology and some of the finest people that understand that technology. We got a nation full of iPhones. We got people that are cutting and pasting videos. They understand this technology. It's not just something that the government understands. And what's happened is we have all these people who, even amateurs, are somewhat professionals. But we have professionals that step up to the plate and say, wait a minute. Just like in 9/11, you had the engineers and the builders and the engineers have that crew that said that building couldn't have fell like that. It's impossible. And they've been squishing, you know, they've been trying to keep it dead, you know, for years. And that's gaining momentum. But everybody should look at some of the Facebook stuff that's going on. Our Court Watcher site is going crazy. There's rallies that have been sprouting up all over the West, you know, and the South, and it's going to keep going. And they want to kill this thing, and they're worried now. The sheriff of Burns has a bodyguard, and they said, "What do you need a bodyguard for? You have deputies." And he's like, "Let's not go there." They're all afraid that they're going to kill them because he did a lot of nasty stuff, and he knows what they did to kill Finnegan, and now he's afraid for his life. So he had to hire himself a bodyguard because he's afraid of his masters now because he knows too much. So he's slated for death, I think, and so does he. He wouldn't have hired a bodyguard if he didn't think so. So, you know, this is also predicted in the Bible. It talks about how when those people who ruled with an iron fist over the people, when the Lord finally came back and threw them down, how they would be running and crouching and at every rustle of the leaf be frightful. And that's exactly what's going on out there right now. They're all frightful of each other. There was another report that all of a sudden these, I don't know if they were BLM or Forest or FBI, I think they were FBI, came into town and they got their full regalia and their machine guns on. And the lady who owns the diner, she says, "Well, what's going on now?" And they said, "Oh, well, we got reports of threats and there's things going out at the park." "Yeah, what would that be?" They said, "Well, you know, somebody's been killing these ducks and pulling their breast out and throwing them over the lookout over there." And she said, "No kid." She laughed. She said, "It's duck season, fellas, and when people get ducks around here, they don't pluck them. They pull their breast out. That's what they do. They pop their breast out, and they throw the carcass in the wood for the animals to eat." And these guys are looking at those carcasses saying, "Look, it's a sign. They're going to cut our hearts out." So they're punishing themselves. They're scared. They think that we're, you know, they've convinced these guys that were terrorists, and they're terrorizing themselves. And there's a big momentum out there, and there's a news blackout in the east, and then, you know, the northeast, the southeast. You get east of the Mason-Dixon line, it dies off. You don't hear anything. But trust me, we have sheriffs and we have legislators. They're sick of the federal government usurping their rights. Of course, you have some states that want to take the land back, but then they want to institute another system that's just as egregious, but only instead of the federal government running it, the state's going to run it. So they snuck in a plan to bring the land back to the Utah people. And what's in that plan? All kinds of 800 different fines and fees and things that they can charge these ranchers while they're using the land. So it's no better. It's just, you know, you're just changing one monster for another. But nevertheless, that's, you know, see, the evil will always take what's going on and figure out how they can use it to their advantage. So this is just one more example of them taking a situation and manipulating it, you know, for their own use. But it's really, really, I see the light at the end of the tunnel here. People have had enough. These guys, look, our keepers, they the only reason that they can do what they do is because they rule with fear and psyops. And once the people lose their fear like they are now, it's over. It's like the emperor has no clothes. And let me tell you something. If you see a police officer or a federal agent or somebody, and he's in the process of committing a felony, you have every right to stop him. Now, I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just telling you have a right. You really have a duty too, but you know, who's going to step up to the plate and do that? However, if he's using deadly force where he shouldn't, you know, people that get concealed carry guns and they teach you in the class, the general rule of thumb is that if somebody's in the process of committing a felony and you can stop them, you have a right to shoot them. If a guy's beating up an old lady, you don't have to shoot him in the front. You can shoot him in the back if you're going to save her life. Sometimes we ask too many questions, I think. You know, I mean, you see, I've seen videos where cops were unjustly beating the hell out of somebody, and finally somebody gets off the street and pulls the cop off. Now, you're taking a big chance when you do that. The only thing today is like I said, we're a nation of electronics. Get it on tape. Let the cop know I'm taping you. Don't hit him. Don't use deadly force. Of course, I'll tell you what, if I was home and some cop was coming here beating on one of my kids or my wife, and it looked to me like he was going to kill her, guess what? I'd drop him in his tracks without even thinking twice, and I'll take my chances in court. And I will tell them that, and they know that. And they know that when you're armed, they won't – see, if they know that you have a legal arm on you, they won't do that crap because they're bullies. And I'm not talking about – I'm not generalizing. We have lots of good police officers. And in my area, we have lots of good police officers that really want to protect and serve. They're community-minded guys that I have made, and I have made it my business to get to know them. And so they're pretty good. Now, I don't know what they're doing to people they don't know, but I've made it my business to know them, and they treat me pretty good. So I suggest everybody get on a personal relationship with them, and you'll have less problems. Of course, that will only work in a small community. But when you see somebody doing something, and look at, get your camera out. When a police officer does something, get his badge number. Ask for his supervisor. And go down to the station and complain. Because, believe it or not, they're political animals. And ultimately, they don't really, you know, they want people to pay their fines and be good citizens. But that doesn't happen when everybody's ticked off. They really... A smart police station doesn't want a ticked-off populace, believe me. And if you get to see the chief of police or the head guy or the barracks commander, they're a little bit more politically correct, and part of their political correctness is schmoozing things over and maybe even investigating and punishing a cop that does the wrong thing. So don't be afraid of standing up. People tell me, they say, oh, you become a target if you stand up. And I said, no. I said, if I have to complain about a police officer and I become a target, then I go back in and complain about those other police officers, and I go even higher on the scale, and I bring other people around, and I start a movement. So what happens is they end up not wanting to bother with me because I'm like a porcupine. They don't want that quill in their hand when they grab you. You got to become like a porcupine, and they'll leave you alone. You know what I mean? If it's more trouble than you're worth. And the only way that that's going to happen is if you stand up for your rights. So most of the time, you'll decide, oh, that's that person, leave him alone, because he's just going to create problems. So I just wanted to say that, you know, you use your own judgment, and you use natural law, common law. Obviously, You don't want to let anybody get away with murder. And if you're witnessing a murder, you have a duty to stop it. I don't care who you are or what you are. And that's a basic fundamental right. So I'm going to go ahead and hit next
down. Right, well, look, before you hit the next button, let me hit the next button so I can work my way down to the people that have already spoken.
Okay, go ahead.
So let me get to that point and see where we're at, okay? Okay, that's your next person right there.
Okay, so they're unmuted?
760. I don't think 760 went yet, but get right ahead. They're on,
yeah,
760 is unmuted. So.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, you've already went, Dave.
Yeah, I'm good. You can go to the next person.
Thank you, Dave.
Let me,
I'm going to do it.
You take it from there. You get it from there. Oh, 845 talked also. I'm sorry.
Okay, next question. Go ahead.
Yeah, he already talked.
Oh, okay, so next one again.
Okay, that's the correct one right there.
Okay.
Okay. John and Gerard.
Who is this? What's your name?
My name's Steve Cambridge, Oregon.
Okay.
So I've been through a process this weekend which was highly unlawful. I'm stuck out in a town in Dalles, Oregon, out in the middle of nowhere. They pretty much popped me illegally for a DUI. The whole thing, I was parked on off the street, on the highway, off the highway, and I was, you know, just hanging out in my car. I was having some car problems, and I was trying to let it rest up before I, you know, kept going home. But they popped me on an illegal DUI and all kinds of stuff. So I'm stuck out here. Got no money. I live in Clatskanie. I usually confer a lot with Robert but Bristow. I haven't been able to get a hold of him yet because I've been on the call tonight waiting to get in. But John suggested I get in the call and see if there's anybody out here and give me some help.
What's the name of your town?
Dallas.
Where are you right now?
I'm in a cupola in front of the Catholic Church. Got permission
cupola?
From the,
what is it,
the
cupola?
Front entrance of the the front entrance of the Catholic Church. I'm undercover. It's open, but, you know, I'm out of the wind and the rain. So this town has no, like, overnight services or nothing for homeless people or anything. So it's terrible.
Well, there's nobody. There's nobody in that church. Let me tell you something.
I talked to him. Yes.
Yeah, what did they say? Look, the Catholic Church gets money from the government to take care of people.
Well, they said they refer all these people like me down to St. Vincent de Paul, and they closed at 5:30 this afternoon. Everything closed, all their services down. And they don't even have a homeless shelter at night. They only have one with...
Well, look, if they don't have a homeless... Let me tell you something. If they don't have a homeless shelter, they should give you enough money to get a hotel room for the night. That's what they've always done. You know, I don't know what else to tell you there.
He didn't offer any of that for me, but nothing. So
You got it.
He just said, well, good. He says, stay out of the wind and the rain, and I'll pray for you tonight. I'm like, well, okay, great. You know, this is awesome. It's just,
Did he give you a blanket at least? He didn't even give you a blanket, right?
I did head down to Burns, and I drove down there, and the place is, like, locked up tight. I mean, there's no cell service in or out if you're not from around there. I mean, nothing. I mean, I know. Nothing.
Burns closes up real early. I mean, my goodness, after 9 o'clock.
No, I was down there two different days, like, through the daytime and everything. They have no cell phone service. They got it buttoned down tight.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, look, the only thing we could do is, you know, is call who was ever over there. We'll look and see if we can find somebody. And I don't know,
maybe he can give his phone number here, and anybody on this call tonight that could help him out, give him a call. Why don't you give your phone number, and maybe you'll get a call from someone that can help you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, phone number. Go ahead.
My phone number is 503-756-5241.
Okay.
Repeat that again slower. And give your first name. So start with your first name and then repeat it again slower.
My name is Steve, and my number is 503-756-5241.
Okay, that's a call out from Steve if anybody can do anything. And we do have people roaming through the area.
My intention in going down there was to, you know, make some videos and stuff, and you know, it didn't serve me any purpose because I couldn't get any service out or anything on my phone or laptop or nothing. I mean, it was horrible. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. It was weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went around and I don't know. I did what I could, but I mean, there's...
Well, listen, I would imagine you're going to get a couple of phone calls, and I'm pretty sure, you know, you'll get something. Somebody will do something. You know, and
thank you.
Yeah, and I know Robert's around here, but Robert's on his way. He's on the road a lot, and I'm sure he'll get the message too now tonight. So
well, they tried to strip my rights every way, which way to Sunday. I would not take a breathalyzer. I did not take a sobriety test. None of this shit. Because it didn't hurt anybody. I was sitting on the side of the road. I was sleeping, basically,
well,
in the car.
Okay. What I learned is when you're in your car, even sitting in it, and even off the road, like in a driveway that's visible to the road, and I mean, they shouldn't be coming in on private property, but if they can see your car and they see your foot on a brake light, you need to have those keys out of the cab of that car. You need to get out, put them on the back tire, or hide them someplace so they're not within your reach, and they're done. That's the end of story. If those keys are not within your reach and they're not on your body, they have nothing they can say. And it's simple as that. That's a very easy precaution. Get out, stick them on the top of the back tire or something, and then go in and lock the doors, and they can't bother you. Nothing they can do. So that's my that's a little bit of wisdom from people I know that have had hard knocks have been busted in their driveway, and they do all kinds of stuff like that. So, a word to the wise. All right, I'm going to go ahead and move on, and look at. We'll pray for you, and I'm sure your shout out is going to get some results from somebody, you know, to one of our brothers. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Thank you, John.
Okay, next questioner, you've been unmuted. Is that Jim?
Hey, how you doing, Gerard? I was just curious if you received my email today that I sent with all the states and all the I sent it to questions at National Liberty Alliance with the 50 states plus North Carolina plus Washington D.C. with all the land owned by the government that belongs to the states, and just so everybody could see exactly how much it was.
Oh, yeah. What's your email?
Rhode Island Jim 3@gmx.com.
Oh, yeah, I got two from you. Rhode Island Jim.
Right, the first one I screwed up. Well, I'm doing the transcriptions. I screwed up when I sent the first one, and so I ended up sending it again.
Yeah, I did get it. I didn't open it because I've been so crazy today, but I will look at it, you know?
Excellent. Okay. That's it.
Thanks
a lot.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. You've been unmuted. It doesn't tell me who you are yet. It takes a minute to pop up in the window. There you go. 509.
This is Rhonda from Washington State.
Hi, Rhonda. How you doing?
Hi. Good, thanks. Hey, I know we've been talking about having maybe Chris Ann Hall come on to the calls at some point.
We would love to get her if somebody can get a hold of her. We've sent her emails, but, you know, she's very busy.
The reason I'm calling is because she's doing a two-night talk here in a little town about 20 minutes from me, which I'm going to go to both nights. And I thought if there was something that you guys would want me to say to her, or how would you like me to approach her?
Boy, I wish I could give you one of our, if you could get her one of our books of what we've done, just to look. You know that book, John, that we printed out over there in Burns for the Committee of Safety? If somebody could get one of those to Chris Ann, you know, or if nothing
else.
Well,
I'll tell you what. Yeah, you know what? Why don't you ask if you can get her mailing address.
There you go. That's what I was going to say.
And we'll mail her a book, you know.
Okay.
I mean, we have it in digital, but look, it's much better in hard copy. You know, it's so hard to get the little stick and stick it in the computer and go through it. It's much more impressive when you see that those papers and everything printed out. It's much easier to read, I think, in paper. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I'll bet she is, too. So if you can get an address, we'd love to send her our stuff and let her look at it. And tell her, look, we want her to comment on this stuff. We want to have her on the call. We're nationwide. We got over 5,000 members. You know, we got lots of cases we're working on. You know, just talk it up a little bit. You know, I think she's wonderful. You know, tell her most. We're all in love with her anyway, so she might as well come out.
Well, you know, I thought about the Constitution booklet and our little booklet for common law. But she can probably recite the Constitution booklet.
Well, she's probably got 1,000 Constitution booklets, so don't give her. Yeah. I guarantee you, she's got the Constitution booklet. That you don't.
Is
have
there any of our paperwork you'd like me
you
to print
You could give
out
her our judges. Yeah, you could give her the one for judges, juries, and bailiffs. That's a good one. But man, if we could get her the book that has everything in it that we did, and it's so easy to read.
Well,
and it
pretty
has,
much, you know, I did, when I put that book together, I think I put a few things in there. I think I did an index and so on. But,
oh, yes,
but the key
really
papers,
good.
The key papers that I put in there was the papers that we filed in the courts. So if you wanted, you can really download each one of those PDF files that we filed in the court. I think there were 13 or 14 of them. And just print them out, staple each one individually, sort of stack them up, and just let her know these are the papers that we've been filing in the courts, and you give her the website. And you can also print out the paperwork we did in Oregon, which is on the same page. It's all on the news page or the Oregon page, one or the other. They're both the same. And you can print out the Oregon stuff, which we did for the Hammonds, which we need to follow up and get back on to. But there's so much going on, we haven't been able to yet. But in any event, that's more paperwork. I would do that as a secondary. And that would be impressive for them, for her to see, and hopefully, get her attention.
Well, it's not that we're not working on the Hammonds. It's that the strategies are lining up, and we can't spring it until we're ready.
Yeah, but we do have to do a paper concerning the fact that, and they've done this silently. We only happen to know about it because someone else found out about it out there, and that is that they've gotten the Hammonds to agree through their lawyer they didn't want the habeas corpus. Now that's stress and pressure, but that's not legal anyway. They can't do that. They can't overrule the grand jury. Look, we do a paper for someone to get them out of jail. Whether they like it or not, it goes through. And that clearly is really for the judge or the prosecutor, whether they like it or not, we don't care. They didn't answer that paper, and they broke the law by removing those papers, and that's a U.S. code violation. And if a judge is involved in that and push that forward, that's 20 years in jail for that judge. And anybody involved in that, I don't remember whether it was 2 years or 3 years in jail. And we intend on seeing them about that.
Well, I have talked to an elderly gentleman that has known the Hammonds for many years, that lives near Burns, not in Burns, but near Burns. And this has been when all this first started. And he said that the Hammonds were told when they were originally arrested that if they didn't go along with what was going on and buck the system, that they would send the powers that be out to the house and raid the house and put them in a prison they didn't want to be in, far away from their family. And they also...
We heard the same thing, and we intend on putting that in writing, yes.
Okay. And the fact that they forced the Hammonds to sign paperwork that gave the government the first right of refusal on buying the property?
That we're not aware of. We have no direct evidence of that. But if we can get someone that could bear witness to that, we will put that in writing and get it into the courts, too. Look, these people are criminals. They're thugs. They need to all be in jail.
Right, right. I agree. But Chris Ann is not going to be in Proctor, Washington, is where she's going to be, until the 21st and the 22nd of April. So that's when I will go and listen to her and then talk to her.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yeah, see if you could put those papers out, like John said, even if you give her a bunch of the more important ones that she can look through.
I'll get that stuff printed up and give it to her. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next questioner. You've been unmuted. You haven't popped into, let's see.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, hi, Gerard. Hi. I'm just curious, are there more people on the call tonight than usual?
I don't know. Let me see. It says attendee. Well, it works. Mine says these numbers aren't accurate. 124, and that's what's showing.
Yeah, I got 117. But, people come on and off the call throughout the program, and we usually get somewhere around 400 people throughout the night. But I haven't seen tonight particularly anything more than normal, I don't think.
I don't really watch the numbers that much.
We'll know at the end of the night because they do give us a report, and that's how we know how many people actually came on the call throughout the night. And if it's, we might see it then that it's over the normal.
I was wondering because I spent hours today posting for tonight's meeting. I was wondering if it made a difference. But I was getting a lot of likes and a lot of comments. In fact, one comment, I was getting a lot of sharing too. So, and I posted out at, on the site for Finicum and a lot of places, a lot of groups. Anyway, one of the comments that I got right here is, LOL, for laugh out loud. Most of the comments were good. But this is just one I see. It says, the sheriffs cannot ignore the federal warrant if he wants to keep his job. And it says, please show exactly in the Constitution where the sheriff has authority above and beyond federal laws. Well, it's not in the Constitution, but where I believe you put that, didn't you put that in the letter that you're sending out to the sheriff?
We do have that in a paperwork, and I'm working on a paper and a chart. I'm trying to simplify it. It may be two or three pages, but I'd love to do it in one page, but I don't think it's possible, which clearly shows the power and the authority where the sheriff comes from. You have to understand a few things. The Constitution calls for the common law, but the Constitution doesn't describe, the participants of that common law. It doesn't get involved in to say that there is a tribunal, although it does refer to the grand jury. It doesn't refer to the trial jury, but the trial jury is found and the grand jury both are found in the Bill of Rights. Nevertheless, you have law. Now, whenever the word law is used, it's always common law. Okay, so the other courts would be what's called nisi prius courts. They're statutory courts. This is a court of law, a court of justice. Justice is synonymous with virtue, and virtue brings us back to the principles of law, the principles of God. Now, when you go back into history, and this goes all the way back quite far, it goes back to Exodus. Okay, well, let's take it not to Exodus, but maybe 40 years later. It goes to when they came into the promised land and they set up a process for the people to be ruled by God. And they had 400 years of success. Now, the sheriff, the court makeup goes that far back. You had the judges, which were really the tribunal, which were the people, okay? That's who the judge in the court is the tribunal, and the tribunal is the jury, the trial jury. You also have the makeup of the court as we get down a little further into history. You have the sheriff, and I know Brent was talking about the sheriff tonight. As a matter of fact, I got to go back and re-listen because I wasn't paying close enough attention. There was other things going on here, but he said a lot of interesting things I want to go back and review, and particularly how far back the sheriff actually goes. But the makeup of a common law court requires certain groups of people. Now, three groups are absolutely required. Four is preferred, so at least in what we've seen anyway. There must be a sheriff, must be a court officer, someone who is the constitutional caretaker. There must be a coroner, you know, that if there's a death, they make the decision whether there was something fugazi there or not. And then there must be the tribunal, and that's the people, that's the jury. And a court can continue with just those three parts, the tribunal, or the coroner, and or the sheriff. But there is also the magistrate, okay, and that's he acts sort of as a traffic cop. That is the makeup of a common law court, okay? And without the sheriff, there is no common law court. There is no protector of the Constitution. All but two states clarify in their own state constitution the sheriff, but whether they do it or not, it's irrelevant because we are common law. What is common law? It must be a common law court. One of the big problems we had was in the Judiciary Act of 1789. They took liberty. The legislators took liberty to move the courts to proceed according to the rules of chancery, and they actually turn our courts into chancery courts. That was corrected, I believe, also during Marbury versus Madison. That particular problem, I believe, was corrected there, where it became null and void. Because look at, we don't have, although chancery courts were in the United States, or before we became the United States, in the colonies, it was here. Because that also was attached to England. Chancery courts is really, the assault upon common law courts. It's the civil side where we're going into really the natural law or the common law. And so there's always been that battle between man and God, so to speak. God has set forth his law, and man is constantly trying to take it back and rule. Of course, these are tyrants. And that's the battle. Matter of fact, that's what we're laying the paper out. I think it's going to show quite clearly. So they put in the chancery courts or the rules of chancery, which changed the whole system. But if you go into the Constitution and you look into Article 3, you discover that it talks about there is only law and equity. Okay, and equity courts are really contract courts. And there is a judge that rules in an equity court, and he should be ruling according to American jurisprudence, which are the principles of law. And if he makes a mistake or is out of bounds, out of his jurisdiction, you could take it up the process. You go to an appellate court or court of appeals, and then ultimately United States Supreme Court if it could make it into that court. But that's the process of appealing that. And that's the only place where that whole process takes place. As far as the common law courts, whatever decision the jury makes, it's final. Okay, there is no judge, there is no Supreme Court that can make that can overrule that decision, unless, of course, the Supreme Court has a duty to overrule or to do something should the decision of that court violate someone's unalienable rights. Then, of course, they have the ability to, step in and do something. But and that is rare. So that's the process. And that's what makes up the court. If you do not have a constitutional officer, then you don't have common law. Now, just think about this. If you have a town police, they owe their allegiance ultimately to, maybe there's a council, a town council, or a mayor. Okay, one or the other. I don't know if there's anything else, but those are the two structures that I'm aware of. So they owe their allegiance to them. In other words, the town council or the mayor can fire them. If you have state police, the governor can fire them, okay? You have city police. It's the same thing. Mayor of New York City could fire, get rid of any police officer within the structure. So the cities, the towns, the village, they all owe their allegiance to a political animal. There's an individual that's political that can get rid of them, and that's a very dangerous situation. We need a common law officer who answers only to justice. So nobody can get rid of a sheriff. He is elected by the people. His job is to be a constitutional officer. He shouldn't be giving out tickets or dealing with any of the statutory junk. He should just be focusing in on his job. If the FBI comes into his district to execute a warrant or any federal agency, it is incumbent upon them to contact the sheriff to let them know that they're coming into town and they're going to be executing a warrant. And it is the duty of that sheriff to go and view that warrant and make sure that there is a signed wet ink signature from a judge, and also that there is a sworn affidavit or the necessary affidavits are in place. If those two things are missing, he cannot permit that warrant to go forward. And if the sheriffs are doing their job, no one would ever be arrested by the IRS because they have no legal warrants, because the sheriffs would be able to stop them right there at the gate. So the power, the necessity of the sheriff is the sheriff works directly for the people. And the only way he can be removed from office is by the people, either through the ballot box or through an indictment for breaking the law. And nobody else can get rid of them. Once we lose that, we only have political police. We have police that are not, they're not even constitutional. There are no police that are constitutional that I'm aware of, except for the sheriff. He's the only constitutional officer. Now, I'll tell you what. Once we get to the point where they can no longer, enforce, because, you know, these are all nisi prius courts. They have no constitutional authority, town courts, village courts, city courts. But with the exception of New York City and maybe other cities, but New York City is referred to in the in our New York Constitution that it is a court of record, which means that it needs to go forward according to the common law. All the other courts, though, all the city courts, the town courts, the village courts, and in some places the county courts, not in our state, though, they also are supposed to be common law courts, courts of record. But those courts don't have the authority to or the ability to fine or incarcerate. And so every time they arrest someone for some kind of an infraction and send them over to the sheriff, not knowing his job, is incarcerating these people illegally. He's participating in the crime and he doesn't even know it. Okay? And so once the sheriff stops accepting those people because he understands his job, all right, and once the people start suing these judges for violating their honorable rights because they have no jurisdiction on them, there's no due process there because it's not a court of record, once that happens, all those courthouses will close. And when those courthouses close, the revenues will stop. And the towns will start to feel the pressure of that. The police departments will disappear, and you'll get back to the purity of what should be, and that is the sheriff. Now, he probably would have to build his rankings up a little bit. The county would have to put out the money necessary according to the population, the appropriate, whatever that would works out to be. But now you would have at least a county that is operating under common law. And you wouldn't be filling these jailhouses with people that break statutes. And now you would have a prison. You wouldn't need state prisons no more because you can house these people that have to go to jail. I mean, how often should that really be that someone should have to go to jail? It's only violent crimes. And so they could be housed, of course, in the county jails. So, again, there'd be a lot of money saved from state prisons, and you'd get rid of a lot of corruption because there's money-making deals going there. And people who needed to be incarcerated for one reason or another, because it's very rare that anyone should really need to be incarcerated. The whole thing about common law is to pay restitution, and that's your punishment. Your punishment is restoring the individual you damaged. And that's difficult to do if you're in jail. But, you know, if they're fear of running or something, well, they can put a bracelet on them and place them in, house arrest to some degree. You know, I don't know that there's a reason to keep them in house arrest all the time, but they could know their location, that they haven't left the area, and that they're going to work and they're paying restitution, and that part of the contract is being kept up on. So the system we got, it needs to be brought back to the purity of common law.
Okay. Thank you, John. We got
thank you very much.
Look at who's speaking. Is that
me?
Kelly?
This is Pamela.
Oh, Pamela. Look, look at the short answer. That was a good answer because that's what it is. But, That's the answer. You know, look at liberty requires maturity and responsibility. But you just tell those people that say, where does the sheriff get the power? Just tell them, look, Sheriff Max sued the federal government over the Brady Bill, and he won. And they said the sheriff is the top cop in the land, and he doesn't have to follow what the federal government says in his county. Now, he should not. He regrets that he sued them because he thinks that he shouldn't have had to do that, and he's absolutely right. But God works in strange ways. Look, it gave him a platform over all these years when they declared that the sheriff was the top cop. So tell them in 1997, and I don't remember what that case was, it was Sheriff Mack and another sheriff against the United States under the Brady Bill, and he won. And it said in no uncertain terms that the sheriff was the top cop above the federal government. And basically, John, what you just did is you went against thousands and thousands and many years of Hollywood movies where the Fed comes in and pushes the local cop aside and says, we're taking over now. So they've been brainwashing us in the movies that the Feds are the top cops, and that's absolutely a lie. Okay, thank you.
What's gonna happen in, like, I think it's Connecticut, where they don't have sheriffs?
That's unconstitutional. They need to be reinstituted. Somebody has to take it up. They did a referendum.
It's in their constitution for the sheriff to be elected, so they got a big problem.
Right. Somebody has to take them to court because
and
they're breaking. Huh?
We will do that.
Right.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your answers. I really, really appreciate all your time you spend answering everything.
Okay, I'm going to move on because we've got a few people left and we got less than 10 minutes. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What's
You've
up,
been
everybody?
Unmuted. Yeah.
Hello. This is Jeremiah Donaldson again, calling you again back from the Northern California.
Okay.
Right,
so
you dropped
I was
off,
wondering.
So.
I did. Yeah. Actually, the phone just cut off. Yeah. Boom. Gone. But
it
you know what I was saying was that. Thank you. I heard when I came back on, I heard something about my question about who are our representatives, and I was referring to as common law, right? Like grand jury members, who are the representatives? There are none, because if the representatives are generally out of line, like Congress can tend to be in their acts that declare specific emergencies and states that they can basically practice eminent domain, you know, because of
they don't have that authority.
Specific assent. Well, actually, there's okay. So you mean to Congress?
We've never
right?
given Congress the ability to do that. We never gave them the authority. No, you know, it's the only authority we gave to Congress is found right there in the Constitution.
Okay. Here's the thing. Like I was going to mention earlier about the states being. First of all, okay, I want to mention the Act of June 7th, 1939, which is natural resources of the United States and certain strategic and critical materials being deficient. It allows the U.S. government to come in and null and void because of, what's that? That's an act of Congress?
We haven't given the authority to do that. They have no authority to do that. Where in the Constitution do they have the authority to do those things? They don't.
Here's one. Let me answer that. Is that because the Articles of Confederation had only a certain amount of states that were allowed to be permitted into the League of Friendship? And after that, no more would be admitted.
No.
Every state after that, I'm not talking about the Constitution. It's about the Articles of Confederation. Well, we'll get back to the Constitution.
Yeah, but the Constitution.
What I'm trying to make was that states that are. I want you to talk. I want you to give me the feedback. I know you have something important to say. I really do value what you have to say. But I think you're going to really appreciate what I can deliver, and then you're going to give me really something that I could take with me, you know, as far as, like, I want to learn something here. So that's what my goal is. I'm trying to learn something. But I suppose people of the state would not refer anyone that was admitted after the maximum was reached from the Articles of Confederation, and even if the Constitution allowed new states, they would have to assent to this other entity, which is evidenced by all of the states that were admitted. All of their the act that created their statehood actually claims that they assent to the jurisdiction. So they actually ask and request to be part of the union. See, that's, the other states did not. They were all.
Well, that's not how it works, you know.
Okay.
No.
Well, that's why I'm trying to confer to you is that we are actually. Not making make sure that we claim to be the right people. If you're saying that we're the people of the United States, you're saying you're a citizen of the United States.
No, because the United States, it says here in the Constitution very clearly, we the people of the United States. Now at the end of that, it says establishes this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, we the people of the United States, I usually add in of America, but our founding fathers didn't always do that because they didn't have to play the word game that we play today. I don't play that word game. I don't care what words they use. I don't care what game they play. We ignore the game. We call it for what it is. It's a fraud and fiction. They're de facto. We're de jure. We're going to do what we have to do. And these are extraordinary times.
So are you in fact, aren't you? Because that's what de facto means.
I'm one of the people. I am. We are.
You are in fact.
No, when we de facto, not in fact, de facto. No, when we come into the courts as the grand jury, we are the de jure. Okay, we are the ultimately until that court is handed or that case. A court case opens as soon as a grand jury starts doing indictments. And
all right, can I ask
you?
I want your opinion.
To do that, let me just finish this so you understand.
All right.
As soon as they start the process of going through for a potential indictment, a court case, generally speaking, has been opened. And when they come to the decision that, yeah, there's enough here, that we need to send it into the jury so that they can, investigate it further and discover innocence or guilt of an individual, injury or not. So, and then that goes into the courtroom. This is the de jure jury, the de jure grand jury, and the de jure court. The de jure. The de facto is the ones that's there now. They're acting outside in fiction. That's a de facto court. They're puppet juries, puppet grand juries. Therefore, they're de factos. They're not de jure. And therein is the difference. And we call it for what it is. And you know what? They don't say nothing. They used to say something. They used to try to argue the point. But they always find themselves.
Right.
They always stick their foot in mouth.
One thing for you is that you can claim that there is no standard to define what the people is. If you say that you are the people of the United States, then you're a citizen. That means let me read this one thing. California truck owner was not among the people of each state whose right to free ingress and regress to and from any other state was acknowledged by the Articles of Confederation, since California was not one of the states in this union or a state, as that term was used in the Articles of Confederation. And this is from a 2012 case here in California Appellate District. And that's why I want your opinion.
The appellate court decision doesn't give anything that has any precedence per se. The only thing that may have some precedence per se would be that by the United States Supreme Court, which is the 9 justices in Washington. And they can only rule ultimately under two situations. Number one, concerning equity courts. They cannot rule anything in a common law court with the exception of a violations of someone's unalienable rights by a jury in some way or so. Other than that, shut up and go home to the judge justices out there. They have nothing to say for what we the people make the decision. We are the tribunal, the final word. There is no appeal. You do realize when a jury makes a decision, there is no appeal to that. The only way there could be an appeal to that and possibly get anything done, and you can bring the appeal up and say, hey, look, you know, we didn't have DNA back then, and the person looked real guilty. But look at this, proves they would. Well, that is.
Let me ask you this: is your letter to the sheriff an appeal to the senators as well to actually be in an administrative process, so that way you can exhaust that type of remedy if they ever bring it up? Do you have a record?
We go right up on our news page. We've already sent papers to the Congress, both houses up in Washington.
Have you sent one individually?
Everybody. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we haven't done that individually because we don't have the money. But we are going through the process right now, and that's our next project. I think we have to get at least one paper going to each one of them individually. There's 540 of them.
We sent
a lot of stuff faxes individually, but that's difficult too because these guys are hiding from us, and woe is them. And you know what? Because they're hiding from us, it doesn't matter that they didn't get it. Because they got a doorkeeper down there, because we did send people down through their doorkeeper, and they send that paperwork back. And because they got a doorkeeper, that's their problem. They should know better. Look, if they were elected, they got a job to do. Don't tell me you're ignorant to the job that you should have. Don't tell me you're ignorant to the fact that you need to be available to the people and you don't know that you're not available. They do not want anyone to be able to make mass contact to these people.
Those are opinions. I'm going to tell you something real quick. Well, you're saying a lot of opinions, but my question to you is this. Will you rebut my argument?
Listen, you're going to have to hold on a minute because...
Go ahead. Go ahead. I love you.
Okay, I have to. This is why I go long-winded, because the whole purpose is to teach. That's why we're here on Monday nights, to inform and to teach, and that's why we have speakers that come on to teach and sometimes to inform. But here, look at these people. Okay, it is irrelevant. They cannot say they didn't know, because they didn't know because they didn't want to know, and they're going to be found guilty as anyone else. There may be a little lesser punishment for them because they're just stupid, all right? You know, there's no law against stupidness, but nevertheless, ignorance. You can't claim ignorance to the law. We're not going to let them either. So go ahead. That's all I want to say.
Look, there's another thing that came up that might help this too. Is there's a presumption. You hear that they presume that you're a U.S. citizen under the District of Columbia. And there's a recent court case where the judge said there is no presumption and you can't go by a Social Security card or a license or anything else like that, because that's not what establishes residency. Residency is established by where you lay your head at night. So if they want to say that you're a resident of the District of Columbia and therefore liable for income tax and everything, there's a law that says that you can't do business in one state in order to establish residency there. It's not where you do business. It's where you reside and where you lay your head at night. So that whole presumption that they've been going on, that we're a U.S. citizen, and therefore, because you have a Social Security number or a driver's license, that doesn't establish residency. It blows their whole argument right out of the water. So, we don't want to spend time answering them in their de facto courts. If somebody comes up to you and says, look, I got a Captain Kangaroo ring, and this ring and my decoder says that you're in violation of my code and this and that, you're going to laugh at them. You're not going to answer them. You're not going to give them credibility. You're going to say, get out of here, right? And basically that's what they are. They have a Captain Crunch, a law book that they're trying to put on us with the little panel
out of the box. I think it comes out of tricks. Maybe
I saw the Captain Crunch one, but you're right. There's probably a tricks one. And so basically that's what we're saying. We don't care what cereal box you cut out, what you're saying. Basically, it's fraud. It's a fraud, and we're not answering you because it is a fraud, and we're going by this rule book, which is the Constitution, that and unless you can show me in there where it says Captain Crunch, guess what? You're out. And, I mean, that's about as simple as I could make it, you know?
Okay, when was the last time you read the Articles of Confederation, though? And that's important because it's our founding document for the states and their individuality. It basically preserves the Confederacy concept, you know, that we came from a Confederacy.
I understand that, but that still doesn't that doesn't describe how they think that they're bringing us into a jurisdiction where we're giving up
Here it does. Yeah. Here's how, because every state admitted into the union. Can I finish this and then you can come on in, buddy? I know this is your call, but you have to respect the guests, right?
Well, it's not my call, but it's our call. But yeah, but I gotta, you know, hey, look, even the court needs a traffic cop. So we need one here, too. But go ahead.
You're awesome. Ultimately, I just feel like, you know, it's important for us to pay attention to the way that states were treated after the Articles of Confederation and when they were admitted into the Union. Right? Because we have to think about incorporation and what it really means outside of the Articles of Confederation after the actual D.C. was created, you see? And so because of the municipal nature of it, you see, and who is the people? Are you a people of the municipal corporation representing the county, which represents the state? It's all illusion. No, I know what you're trying to do, but I'm saying good luck. I'm saying good luck to you. I'm saying I think you want to create something brand new, especially for most of the states. That's all I'm saying. I can see the big picture. And,
right.
Hey, good luck,
we
man.
We want to bring back what common law should be, okay? And that's what we're not really recreating it. But we are doing is taking power and authority. We, the people, have that power and authority to take up. After all, we are the tribunal. We're the decision makers. We have government by our consent. And you can't tell me that I got to have to go to a congressman to get my consent. That's not who represents me. Ultimately, that congressman represents me in areas we have affixed in the Constitution, in particular for Congress. It's Article 1. They have 18 powers, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And of those 18 powers, okay, it defines what they can do. And I've given them the authority. I agree with the authority we gave them to take care of that business. You know, we don't have time to take care of that business, but they can't go beyond that.
But I never mention you. I never hear you mention your state. What state are you from?
New York. Oh, I've mentioned that many times.
Okay, so you claim New York citizenship then, right? Now that was one of the original 13 colonies or states, right? So
yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. That remember, the Constitution also gives the authority of citizenship to the federal government. You see, the point is when someone becomes a citizen of the United States, in fact, okay, not going through the de facto stuff, when they become a citizen of the United States, they can take up their citizenship in any state they want. You know, so you can go to New Jersey, you can go to Texas, you can go to New York, and that's why the federal government is handling that, okay? And I happen to have been born in New York. I was born and raised here. This is where I've lived all my life. But tomorrow morning I could get up, pack a bag, go to Jersey. The moment I cross the line, I'm a New Jerseyan because I'm moving to New Jersey. I got everything. I have all equal rights and privileges or whatever it is that's involved in that state. You know, the same laws apply anyway, pretty much so. But look, you go to the Articles of Confederacy. You know, I personally haven't read through them. I haven't had time yet, but I'm still working through the Federalist Papers. And the Federalist Papers, in my opinion, is much more important to appreciate and realize because that was the conversation and the argument to create the Constitution. And whatever was going on in the Articles of Confederacy, you know, there's a lot of things they didn't have. They didn't have anything set up for the judiciary. There are a lot of other things, I'm sure, that they didn't have worked out. They had an emergency mode going on where they created a government for a term period in between governments, so to speak. They left one government, they're creating a new government, and they're fighting a war, and they're trying to structure everything. So you have those papers of the Confederacy And so that's what was their law during that time period. It was never meant to be the Constitution. But the product of the work of our founding fathers and everything they'd done ended up to be in three documents: the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Capstone Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution. But so those are the three documents we've ended up with. And, of course, the conversations to get us to that would have been the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, and also a lot of writings of our founding fathers, of letters that took place back and forth during that time period and after, which created what and who we are. And but the purity of it all and the conclusion of it all is found in the Constitution. And there's not much interpretation. When I finally went down and sat down and said, okay, I'm going to read this Constitution to try to really understand it, you know, you really didn't need that much of an education. You needed a good dictionary. A good law dictionary is, in the sense of Black's Law or Brovier's, is good to use, you know. But basically, it was plain language. It was clear. Look, at you're given 18 powers. I understood that. The law of the land. I understood that. You know, the power and the authorities and what you know, the okay. judicial process set up and the system set mm-hmm. up on the federal level. I understood all that. Look, at you don't really need anything. Of course, you right. can get a bigger view of it and a much okay. better appreciation.
Don't forget, it was an experiment, they said. It was up to us to perfect it. They said it wasn't perfect, and we know it wasn't perfect because the enemy was there from the beginning. Look at those bankers. They wanted to get rid of the church, and they wanted to get rid of the kings, and so they helped us, but they got their fingers right around our throats right away. So they
well, wanted
that was always
thank
here.
You. True. It's actually in the early colonies, that's absolutely correct. So it's really cool that the states were created and then they just declared independence. But in closing for me, okay, so I know there's other things you guys want to do. I just want to say that, and the point for people to take away from this, for me especially, is that, you know, the Articles of Confederation established freedom of movement, and anyone could pass freely between states, you know, excluding vagabonds, fugitives, and paupers, right? And so all people were entitled to the rights established by that state where they were traveled. So that didn't actually come from the Constitution. It was basically adopted in there as one
right.
of the principles.
It was picked up in Article 4, so, Section 1, Full Faith and Credit.
And the other thing would be that, you know, again, the articles assert the separate states with the Confederation government, basically each state retaining its sovereignty. That's really important, and that's why we have this whole nullification process that you were mentioning earlier.
Well,
so
you make a lot of really good points, and it does give us information where some of these things came from, and also, you know, the Federalist Papers, the same thing. And with that, I'd like to make the point that now, you know, because that's how we understand things. Well, where did this come from? How did we come up with that? Where did the jury come from? You know, all this other stuff. Well, now you've got to get back into the Bible because it comes back out of common law. It goes back to 1400 B.C. When Israel came into the Promised Land, and that was where it all started right there. That's where the tens of the tens, you know, tens, the tens, the hundreds, the thousands, everything was set up. Yeah, the jury came out of there. Common law all came out of there. The king of the court came out of there. And they were interested in justice. Because they were
okay, I understand that I have to embrace the concept of God, and I get that, but the Constitution does not allow for mixing church and state, and I interpret that.
I agree with not mixing church and state. That should never get into the priesthood. I agree with Jefferson. He was right on the mark with that. But I don't know if you know that Jefferson was strongly for putting the name of Jesus Christ in the Declaration of Independence. There was a lot of them that wanted to put that there, but they realized that they would make a separation of problems with people and so on and so forth. So they put the Creator in there instead. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that was a good idea. I agree with that. I think it's good to use the name of God, and God is however you understand it. But, you know, it is not religion if you use the name of Jesus Christ, nor is it religion if you use the name of Jehovah. It becomes religion when you get into their dogma and their doctrines. That's when it becomes religion, when it becomes priestly. That becomes religion. Jefferson hated the priesthood. He hated the priestly stuff. He hated the religions. But he loved the Lord, and he was definitely a Christian, and he brought the name of Jesus Christ numerous times. So that was his, that's where he came from as a person, you know, and he discovered, you know, I don't know if you know this, but the United States seal, Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were to bring up, did a committee to bring up the seals, and they both created their own seals. And both of them, the seals that they created was the Exodus. There was only two different visions of the Exodus, okay? And that was supposed to be the seal. Now, the enemy had already been in there, and they kind of pushed that off to the side. They never got around to it. And many, many years later, then they moved into another seal, and they got the eagle and all that stuff. But it should have been the Exodus. Moses parting the Red Sea. That would have clarified everything. That would have made it clear exactly who America was. And if you go and look at some of these old buildings, especially down in New York City and any other in the other cities, you'll see Moses up on and different statues of different individuals that represent biblical figures. Okay, mm-hmm. Right up on mm-hmm. the buildings.
No, I mean, I absolutely, as a matter of fact, in Canada, they actually, in some of the courts, from what I understand, they still have Bibles and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but let me read something from the Kentucky resolutions.
My Bible should come back into the court for swearing. People should swear on the Bible because that's what we are. We're Judeo-Christian. And absolutely, they should swear on that Bible.
Listen to this. I mean, that's a great claim to make. I'm not discounting that. But let me listen to this from the Kentucky resolutions, you guys. Okay, which ultimately were some having to do with nullification.
Yeah, Jefferson wrote.
Public, okay, so that the friend...
When he was vice mm-hmm. president, he disappeared for a while, went down there and wrote that for them because he was going up against the president at the time. But go ahead.
It's pretty neat that the friendless alien has indeed been selected as the safest subject of a first experiment. But the citizen will soon follow, or rather has already followed, for already has a sedition act marked him as its prey, that these and successive acts of the same character, unless arrested at the threshold, necessarily drive these states into revolution and blood and will furnish new colonies against republican government and new pretexts for those who wish it to be believed that man cannot be governed but by a rod of iron. I thought that was kind of interesting, you know.
All right, well, we're going to end it with that. And look, we went 16 minutes over because this was an interesting conversation.
Excellent.
We appreciate it, and hopefully people have been edified by it. But we're going to head out of here for now and thank everybody. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And so let me just get over here and see what we're going to end this with. I forget what we're going to click on. Goodness, which one was I going to go? I guess I don't remember what song we opened up with. I'll just pick this one here. Nope, that was the wrong one. Hold on. This one. Roll.